Mr. Chair.
Okay. Ready to get started? Are you ready for a roll call?
Yes.
My name is Chris Gans. I'm chair of the IID committee, and with Carolyn Lori will do a roll call.
Okay. Robin Schombach?
Present.
John Burr?
Present.
Lori Woods?
Present.
Bill Viner? Absent. Michael Keith?
Here.
Mr. Chair, you do have a quorum.
Yes.
I would like to introduce the new Downtown Partnership Director. Ms. Kathleen Erickson will be joining us. This may be the last hearing that Michael will be with us, dependent on if there are any ideas that he's already reviewed that come forward.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here. Thanks.
Michael, if you have any problems sleeping at night, you can always read the IID. Next item on the agenda is approval of the legal action reports for February 16th and November 7th. I am requesting that we move those to item 5 below 3 and 4, and so we can take some time with those.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Motion approved. Next item on the agenda is IID 15-11, the Marist on Cathedral Square, the Marist College, 111 South Church Avenue, proposed restoration, rehabilitation, mid-rise, senior living. And the first item is the project presentation by the applicant. John.
Hi. I'm John Murto, architect from Worcester Frost Murto, and Savannah McDonald's going to join me. I brought some slightly newer material for handouts, and okay, in case people didn't bring their copies.
Is this in this packet?
That's a slightly older version of what's in here, so that's fresh off the press. So thanks for coming. We were here back in March, I believe, February, March, and got your preliminary approval for the project. But because of the financing system for the project, it's a low-income housing tax credit project. The project hadn't been awarded. We hadn't been officially hired. So the design that you saw was, even though it's a lot like what we're presenting today, was preliminary in the sense that we're underway now and headed towards construction. So we wanted to come back and show you the status of the project. I do have kind of an introduction to the project. I don't know if you all want to sit through that or if you want to skip right to the design part of the project, but
I think a refresher would be helpful.
So, timeline again, we were here in February, here we are in November. We were required to come back because there are minor modifications to the design. We've been through the other aspects of the process, and here we are today at the ERC meeting. Sometime in January, we'll be at 100% plans, and we'll be starting construction March or April. The site is at the southeast corner of Broadway and Church. This is the existing two-story Catholic Diocese of Tucson building, which will be demolished as part of this project. These are the different incentive modifications that we looked for. Lot coverage, we have a little bit less parking. There's some exceptions to the landscaping and screening setbacks. Trash pickup is restricted in that area, and there was a minor site visibility issue off of Ochoa. So then I'm going to show you quickly what we presented last time, just as a refresher. So Church, Broadway, about 30 parking spaces at grade. Screened by kind of an arcade screen here on Church, and a small lobby storefront up facing Broadway. Upstairs there are 13 apartments per floor, typically a few less on the upper floor with some common space on the north. Here was the original concept design. A mixture of stucco, metal panels, some shade eyebrows, kind of a penthouse on the upper floor, and again this pedestrian storefront facing Church, and this notion of some kind of a screen or a scram on the parking on Church there. And here it is from Broadway, looking back at it. And then the south elevation, some accent colors, different types of metal panels. The site plan is no good, but So that's where we are. That's how we got here. I'm going to let Savannah sort of talk about the current state of the design, and I'll talk about materials when she's done.
All right, so very similar to what John just showed. Parking's been a little more arranged a little more efficiently, but still we have about 28 parking spaces. And what was shown as the lobby previously kind of expanded into a little more use along the north, including kind of an NPR space and some backdoor service spaces to the southeast. But really, the first floor pulled in quite significantly. From the rest of the building, create a nice arcade on the north. Upstairs, again, 13 units per floor. Seventh floor has 10 units for a total of 75. 65 of those units are single bedroom, and the north side have the two bedrooms, of which there are 10. Always on the corner is kind of a common space for the residents on each floor. So this is three. And then seventh floor, again, with that penthouse, larger amenity space on the front, and a covered patio. So the best way to see that is this perspective. So this is Broadway Church looking south-southeast, with the brown house here, and One West, the new residential project to the east. At this corner, you can kind of see where our focus is at this tower element. Right at the intersection, that's where those amenity spaces stack. This is where the lobby is. This is where the first floor pulls in and creates the arcade. And then we'll get to a little bit more of the detail, but the screening along the west, where there is parking behind, but really focusing on making that a nice pedestrian avenue. Again, special focus on that first floor, providing more texture and shade and a little smaller scale refined material palette to go into. Another thing I want to kind of mention is the massing, kind of breaking it down a little bit, pulling in the more projected elements at the seventh and the second floors, just to kind of bring the mass down a little bit and kind of minimize its impact. So here is the west elevation. We see that screen kind of continuing that pattern of storefront, even though there are cars behind, kind of thinking about that as still a space that could be something else in the future, and continuing that pattern. East elevation is very similar in concept and material, but kind of scaling back a little bit due to budget. It's not as prominent, it's not as seen as much from the street, but a lot of the same ideas and concepts. Same with the south. This is where the entry to the garage is, and the kind of shade structure or vent that separates the first floor from the rest of the building wraps around, so it kind of continues a lot of that language around both sides of the building. And then the north elevation to kind of highlight those concepts with the penthouse up top and then the corner element, which is the focus here. This corner element really kind of, I think, brings a lot of human scale to the building. We pulled it in and created a patio space at the second floor, so it still looks scalable to the pedestrian. And then kind of opening up with more storefront above, and that's where all that amenity and lively space is. And this is the avenue or along Church on the west where the cars are behind. But again, continuing that storefront pattern with the screening material, paying special focus to the plants and that material and the shade and the light and the texture. And I think we'll get to those materials.
So this was a material palette that we had. It's just kind of a variety of stucco colors, two different types of metal panel, and this warm gray stack bond masonry on the first floor. And this is just to show kind of a sand or smooth finish on the it's going to be dry bed, not stucco, but on the stucco-like material, not a heavier finish. And then there are two types of metal panels. We have this 12-inch concealed fastener in a cooler gray. So it has kind of a heavier banding, if you will, and that's on the residential pop-outs. And then the accent band is this, it's also 12-inch, but it has a 2-inch, it's
gruesome. Everybody has that
problem. kind of a 2-inch module, and we're going to use it in two different ways. We're going to use it, So it's a solid panel here, and then when we get down to the floor level, the first floor, it turns to a perforated metal. So it creates, and we wanted that fluted shapes, sort of as an allusion to the downtown, clear story or louver idea.
And it's always in the horizontal configuration?
It's always horizontal, okay. Yeah. So this is that same panel, but it gives you that notion of transparency and versus solid. And we had earlier talked about doing weathering steel. Now we're looking at doing a painted finish. This is a copper painting sample here, which is what this example here is. That's that same panel with a little different flute on it. So it has kind of a little bit of a pigment to it, a sheen to it, sort of, but it has sort of a natural feel. And then again, the stack bond. We have two different types of louvers or eyebrows. I mean, we have these steel frame and perforated metal up high, and then down low we have these sort of braced kicker system, I guess. And those are just examples of that. And then for the screen, we found this echo mesh that McNichols makes, which is two different planes of welded wire fabric, pre-finished. So it creates a little sandwich, which reportedly is a better environment for the plants to grow in. And we're just in preliminary stages of looking at exactly what plants we would use, but we would probably use a mixture, and we're looking at particular, what's going to work on the west exposure with the amount of sun that we have. And, but we're hoping that this mesh has a little bit of a screen to it all by itself, and then as the plants kind of grow up through it.
Is the mesh set in the frame like that, or is it in storefront?
We're going to have it's not storefront, but it's a hall metal. It's a module of storefront, but a hall metal frame.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And that's all I had for materials. We had talked, this is sort of the same presentation we gave about the Brown House last time, which I can run back through, but I mean, just our notion was sort of in this back to the renderings, maybe sort of respect to the scale of the Brown House by creating this petty base to the building, which kind of lines up with the Brown House. And in February, we talked about these setbacks from the Brown House, which are 4 feet minimum, but actually got up to around 11 feet. Now we're sort of at 5 feet minimum, but up to 13 feet on the end, so it's a little better. And then just, we're committed to no adverse effects on the Brown House, and we're working right now with the GC on getting a geotechnical analysis. We're able to consult in with the city or with SHPO. We won't be doing driven piles. We might be doing spread footers or potentially caissons, but nothing with heavy impact and no blasting. There would be some high frequency, smaller impacts, but we're sensitive to vibration at the Brown House.
Are you doing a structural analysis of the Brown House prior to demo and construction?
No, we haven't done one.
And will you consider doing one? Is that
like I say, yeah, we're open to any of that.
Okay. Sure. Just because it's gone through restoration, just ensuring that.
Yeah, I guess I'm not sure how to answer that question, but we're open to that. Sure.
And then a shade study, you've done that in terms of its impact?
We did that the first time around, yeah.
Okay.
And that's what the landscape plan and all that is based on. And we aren't making any changes to the landscape plan.
John and Michael.
So, just a follow-up on your question. So if you're going to do spread footers, I'm assuming you're going to over-excavate and recompact.
I don't have a geotechnical report yet, but that's a safe assumption, yeah.
And so that's, Chris, to your point about the vibrations, they're going to have to do that entire perimeter. It's a pretty good-sized footer. They're going to have to over-excavate, I think, a couple of feet, unless that soil's way different than the rest of the town's soil. So because that, that impact on the ground mass is probably what you're concerned about.
I mean, yeah, we're still working through that, but yeah, we're sensitive to that.
I was actually surprised the entire footprint's entirely changed. It's moved west, and it's compacted, and so on and so forth. Have you made an agreement with the Brown House to put in drainage and access for stucco and all of that sort of stuff?
Right. Well, we have. I mean, we are downhill of the Brown House, so the drainage is coming at us, not going the other way.
Okay.
So that's good, as opposed to the one west, which has for the other problem where the water was running, or potentially water was running out the Brown House. But, yeah, we've negotiated that, those setbacks with the city, with Jonathan and folks at the city. 4 foot minimum, we're up to 5 feet, which was what was agreed to, 4 feet to get the scaffold in to prepare the plaster in the future.
And one west, the columns towards the interior of the lot and then mainly a surface perimeter outline, are you proposing something similar, or is it going to be a little more solid right around the perimeter of the building?
Yeah, we have columns at the perimeter, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, we have sort of three columns along that line, kind of bearing along.
Another thing I noticed, the original presentation had a lot more breakup of the actual street grade massing. There were more projections on the original footprint, and they're more of a solid massing now, but they are more open, and it does have the corner feature. So is that,
I mean,
because of
the
budget, or?
No, certainly not. It's pretty much one for one. I mean, we have, well, instead of having four pop-outs here, we have two that have been joined together, but they're similar dimensions. We have this double pop out here. We have the step back for the penthouse. We have the corner tower. We have the little arcade up the street. Pretty much the same. I think maybe the color contrast is a little more exaggerated here. I'm going to take it back. We have almost the same. We have these two here. These four pop-outs here in the corner at house.
No, up above it looks great. There's better massing, but along the street facade, it's actually a continuous massing. Yes. And was that just basically simplification because of budget?
Let me get there. Sorry, it's been a long time since I looked at these. I mean, this is a straight line here. We have less glass than that.
Yeah.
Okay. We have a little less glass, and that was, frankly, a budget consideration.
Okay.
Is it my turn? Okay. I didn't know if we wanted to wait, if we were waiting.
You could wait, because I do have some staff information to report.
Okay.
It's up to you. I'll wait.
Do we want to wait to hear staff recommendations and then come back to the questions? Okay.
Yeah, it would be helpful, too, as part of that, we could have a refresher if there were specific things that we had asked about.
Yes, so those are the items.
Okay.
Just a quick point, I'd like to note that Bill Miner is also a member of our committee, and he joined us, if you'd like to. Per Section 5.12.7, the Rio Nuevo area's zoning design standards were submitted and reviewed with their very first round of comments. And they, during that process, they reviewed and discussed each of the building design standards, and there were three of them that the Design Review Committee found were not complete and needed to come back and readdress. The first item was the first floor activation along Church and Broadway Boulevard, which I believe Savannah kind of pointed out and alluded to towards the middle of her statement. And that included some screening elements that needed to be added to the garage so it would be a more pedestrian-friendly environment. And then this application, they appear to have addressed that item. They've included additional planning materials along that area, and they've introduced it appeared to us that there were two new materials that were introduced in that area. And their focus was along the streetscape to wrap around the entire building. The last review, there were several comments about the Church Avenue elevation and that there was concern that that might not have been addressed properly. It appears they've done that. The second item was the refinement of the entire building facade. And generally, with the LIHTC projects, we're going to see that they're coming through with a conditional approval towards the beginning. And then the second round will be more designs, and there'll be additional elements and materials added in. We'll be seeing that with our second project today as well. However, with this one, it appears that they really did consider that an add-in and some additional color choices, materials. And we found the design to be updated compared to the first, and more thought and consideration have been placed to it. The one piece that you all kind of commented on the first round that I'd like John to address a little more was the stucco or ephes material. I think there was some concern that that may not age well over time. And so if you could kind of talk about how you came to choose that type of material instead of using a regular kind of stucco.
Well, I mean, we're looking for the upgraded finish. I think stucco, we're afraid, is going to show more cracking on a large building like this. We can add control joints, but drive-it is a more expensive, and I think will weather better over time. We started at stucco, and our design team has sort of been fighting for the drive-it, and that's currently in the budget, and we're pleased to have it as part of the project.
It's a great material, but it attracts woodpeckers.
I haven't heard that. Okay.
So just the plaster over the adobe at our office. I think they just...
Go for it.
That's their nature.
They love the sound of it, yeah.
And then the last item is the eastern elevation and how it didn't quite meet the 15-foot description in the first round. And the committee as a whole found that its design wasn't quite as evolved as some of the other edges were.
So we worked to sort of incorporate the same type of scaling and material variety in this elevation than we had in the other. Savannah said it's kind of the back of the house, and we can't afford to spend as much of the budget back here, but we think we're going to get a lot of the same effects. So now we've got the
wear gloves.
Yeah, it was much more solid mass before.
It was, and we sort of broken the units up into bays with a metal panel between the storefront, and we've added more shape and canopy back here. We also have, so for budget reasons, the lower six floors are concrete, the upper floor is going to be constructed out of wood. So we wanted to sort of articulate that in design. So now we've got a band of more closely spaced drive-it joints at the top to create a kind of a penthouse feel. So I think, and we brought that material down the stair towers as a way of sort of anchoring the kind of just adding more variety and interest on that side.
And can you clarify if the color is going to be actually included into the stucco-like material, or will that be painted on after?
We haven't decided, but yeah, typically it would be an integral color, yeah.
Drive it usually is.
And then the last item, which the DRC requested additional information on, was how, if you had people with ADA requirements, how they would be accessing front and the rear of the building.
Could you repeat that?
How the public that would need an ADA kind of situation, how would they be accessing the building?
Well, so ADA parking is provided inside the garage for tenants at this end, immediately adjacent to the south entry. The site slopes pretty good east to west, so there are some risers kind of at this side, but there's a couple of points in here where you can where you can get at the arcade and the entry from the street. There's also parking on Church, a public parking. Is that?
Yeah. And can you point out where that
is? There's also a ramp. We've added this ramp here to get you up to the higher level.
Sorry. Was there a loading zone in that area?
Outside the loading. Loading is one of the things that we ask for an exception for. So we don't have a loading zone on site now.
And then the last item was the individual parking plan was waived for this project because they were providing the 23 spaces on site, meeting the minimum requirements for the Rio Nuevo area within the infill incentive district.
So they're exceeding that with their 28.
Can I ask for a clarification? Today you said there are actually less spaces in the garage than was presented in the first one, and then I noticed when you were talking about the streetscape, you said at a future date the parking could be shops. So how many are actually in there now, and is the ground floor that is currently parking being built in such a way that it could eventually go towards retail?
Well, I mean, just in the big picture, I mean, we've got this common area here that has a door out on Broadway, and that's, sort of an active tenant space that eventually could be converted to some type of storefront use potentially. And, yeah, I mean, 5 years from now, if everybody's driving automated cars and we don't need parking, we have a concrete structure here that could be converted to. But there are no active plans to get rid of the parking or anything.
And it's 28 now?
It's 28.
And it was 30 before, wasn't it?
I think so.
With the requirement of 23.
Yeah, that's fine. Just different.
One more item was when we sent out the notification associated with the individual parking plan, we received no comments. Okay. And that concludes my piece of the staff report.
Okay. Board members, do you have any questions for John?
I have a question. On that drawing, the light gray and the dark gray at the very top of the sheet, the far east end, is that paving? Is it under roof, interior, exterior?
It's exterior. This is sidewalk here. All this back here is for landscape for PG. And it's not under roof or any of it.
And what is the proposed landscape treatment for any of the unpaved area there?
Back here?
Uh-huh. Do you have a landscape plan? I mean, I see some trees on this one, but it's not
We had a landscape plan. We're working on a landscape plan. We had one that was submitted with the original application. But that area right there, the landscape hasn't been designed for that. But, I mean, this right here is a dog run, so we're imagining not a lot of landscape. In that area, this is the electrical switchgear. It's kind of a service yard. They're really not people. Places.
So it's not a use area per se. Yeah, I was just thinking about that space from the perspective of the other side. So there's parking there, but then there's also the little courtyard behind the brown house. So.
Right. So we are. Well, actually, right here, we're sort of level with the brown house on purpose. When we get over here, we're stepped down 2 feet. And of course, there's a retaining wall, so I don't think any of this, at least, will be visible from even their parking lot. But.
Welcome.
Are you finished?
So, will we see a landscape plan, or is this the last time we'll see it?
That's a process question, I guess. I mean, we didn't feel we were making any material changes to the landscape plan that was approved. We were just sort of bringing back the building design changes, so okay. we didn't update the landscape plan. We could do that.
But it was presented in the previous presentation.
It was.
So what I recall from that, and it was a while ago, so is that there were questions asked and answered there that did not require resubmittal at that time.
Okay, just curious. I don't feel any compelling need to see one, but I didn't know if we were going to see one again or not.
Michael had hands up, and then John.
So there's a downtown streetscape standard that exists that's really different than what you're showing here in the schematic. I think one of the thoughts has been over time that if every project that comes in does something completely unique and different than everything else, we're going to have a hodgepodge of the streetscape even more than we do already. I like what you've drawn here, but I think the prevailing idea of developing that streetscape standard, which is what you'll find in front of One East on the sidewalks there, is much different from here. Did that come into play at all when you were designing this?
No, honestly, no, it didn't, and we could do that. What's important to us is just the concept of the screen wall and the shade and the pedestrian sidewalk, and that it be made out of, pedestrian scale materials, but we'd be happy to use a red brick or different dimensions or...
Yeah, don't get me wrong, please, and everybody should understand, I hate red brick and I hate red brick in the sidewalk. But that compromise of alternating concrete and red brick was to tie it back into the side streets that are red brick, so that we didn't end up... The only place that we've deviated from that is around the Hotel Congress and across the street in the Rialto block. But you can see very quickly, if we did this on every project, Bourne's project, when it comes up, does the same thing. We're gonna really have a...
We're sort of working with that palette. But we were, I guess, inspired by that block you just described to use a different color brick.
We also noticed that the dark brown, which we thought at the time was intuitively going to be far superior to brick, indeed wasn't. It takes stain a whole different way. It's harder to push it up. Anyway, I would suggest perhaps that you reconcile this plan with the downtown streetscapes plan.
One thing I noticed that maybe helped answer this, that the original plan presented the street trees, which are showing in all of your perspective renderings, but all the plans submitted today only show that you were adding plantings along the screening elements for the garage, and that's in addition to the original plan. So are you still planning on doing the continuity of the street trees as originally presented?
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's a point of clarification that's a little confusing from the packets we got.
Are the two, though, that are not shown, are those the site visibility triangle issue?
On the west side there?
There's two further north.
No, there would be trees there.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd be happy if you take a look at some continuity there, but I'd be also fine if the design professional reviews compatibility with landscape, with minor revisions. I did notice that plans review approved this.
This one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there a design professional updated finding?
Yes. Great. Rick will present that shortly.
Sure. Terrific.
I think the work presented today is in keeping with what I expected from our last comments in terms of the development of that first level, the massing, the material selections. I'm really pleased with the development of the project. I particularly think that the idea of flexibility over time with the articulation of the storefront type components on that west side is really helpful. We've looked at other projects about the ability to, not necessarily a proponent of doing away with the parking, but the ability to change over time, I think, is important. And the use of the NPR room with an at-grade Broadway Street entrance which means that over time that could also be used for other uses. I know that it's used for the residents at this time, and I understand that. But I like the flexibility that that gives the project at that street level over time. So I appreciate that. I think as the building moves up, the articulation of those forms is also positive. I actually really appreciate it much more than the original concept presentation. So generally, I'm pleased with that. I wanted to comment that I walked recently on Scott, which is such a nice street. And right, I think it's right there that the TEP building is on the intersection of Scott and Broadway, and has a similar situation with, I think there it's a screen, landscaping, and trees. And that was, it was really very pleasant. And so I think if that's what we're going for here, I think the result could be really nice. I think if it complies, if it can be tied in with the downtown guidelines, that's great, or at least inspired by that, so that there's some connectivity. But generally, I think it's very positive.
Also, Church is going on a road diet, so
eventually,
if the actual frontage along there is going to substantially change over time, so adaptive use would be appropriate.
I mean, it's programmed for bike lanes and stuff that happens west of our curb,
yeah,
which we had hoped to participate in, but the timing on that precludes it. But it doesn't change what we're doing here.
Chris,
yeah.
I'd like to piggyback on what Robin said about the storefronts on Broadway. I think we've had this discussion in other projects as well, but setting that up for other uses has to be done at the time of construction. You can't go back and blow in a restaurant use or maybe even a certain type of coffee shop bakery uses at a later date if you haven't set up for it ahead of time. So I think that should be taken into consideration because we're holding other projects to these standards. And I'm not sure how to address that exactly in this plan. And I think if you don't design for it now, you can't make it happen later.
I think that the flexibility of the at-grade entry and just the designation of that space is a real move in the right direction. I think the difficulty is that the ordinance doesn't necessarily specify what kinds of public uses, so it's difficult to mandate that, and in my understanding of the ordinance, that it be a specific kind of use, but to the most duly noted, but if it can at least be thought of as accommodating the widest range within the project limitations, I think it's a good way to think ahead.
You've got the ability to do TREs on both sides in this building because of the width of the sidewalks, so you have the ability to do outside seating, which is enormously attractive for the TCC users and building users. We've got 300 units going across the street as well. So I think there's actually a really good retail upside to this.
Are we talking about plumbing and mechanical and mm-hmm. power and that type of thing?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you, without knowing exactly what goes in, how do you plan for that?
That's a tough one. And yeah. Not being a designer, I don't know what you need to leave and what you need to bring in.
I mean, we can provide sort of capacity of the electrical service and the plumbing, you know, the sewer main, but without knowing if we need a three compartment sink or this or that, it's hard to plan much beyond that, I think.
Yeah, but you can bring water and sewer to there and stub it off behind a wall. So
okay.
It's there, you can show that one or two units could possibly come in and have that ability to have a public restroom at a later time and do a certain level of food service or even retail service is probably going to require at least a restroom down there. I don't remember if you had one in that plan.
Well, it's right around the corner,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. What is the proposed use of that area?
So it's a tenant lounge and multi-purpose room, computer room, so it'd be an active tenant space, but this particular user, Foundation for Senior Living, and their projects, they also make these types of spaces available for public use if people in the community or neighborhood wanted to sign up and get on a list and use that space. So, we just imagine that it would help to activate the street, whether it's tenants or other folks who are borrowing the space.
If you add them all up, the Marist building, this, Lopez's project one west, we've got over 400 units. That's 600 or so people that are within a 2-minute walk of that corner. I think its retail capacity is enormous.
I don't remember if we talked about this or not in the springtime, but there's a lot of paving on the north, kind of the northwest corner there. And you have two trees shown, but it seems like there's ample space to carve out some of that paving and have additional planting space, at least two more trees and some more pots. And this comment may be out of line, since we probably should have talked about that in March, but I thought I'd bring it up anyway.
No, I think that's a great comment. I sort of had this very urban idea for it, where you have a lot of hardscape, and there's a lot of pedestrians there. But in talking with the landscape architect, he sort of encouraged me and sort of sold me on the idea of carving out some of this for some planters, just to kind of get pedestrians away from the corner right there, and also to add some. So that is a change that we're going to make. I don't know if that's something you could add to a motion or something.
Good. Great. Thank you.
I think to Robin's point about Scott Avenue, the reason that Scott Avenue works is that the percentage of softscape, hardscape, is so high. There's no reason for all this hardscape in the sidewalks and the pop-outs that you have. You're never going to get 8-9 people across walking down this, I don't think. Well, a little bit more maybe with the 400 units and the TCC getting activated, but you have the ability to really come in and do something that's going to soften that approach in the downtown.
Agreed.
Let's go on to the design professional finding. Rick, and then we can go back to questions.
Well, I think everything's kind of already been put out there to some degree. I would follow up on the idea that the ordinance does suggest in some cases very strongly that the retail portion of the public space be maintained at some level. And what seems to happen with a lot of these type of projects where they're primarily residential is that space ends up going in toward the residents, which, you know, that doesn't mean you can't have some combination of the two. And I think some ideas have already been suggested to that degree. The idea of how the parking lot was treated, that was a big issue in the beginning. We didn't want to simply look at cars or see cars in that Scott, or, you know, more in that Scott concept, with the softening up of the landscape and some of the variegation in the hardscape is useful. Initially, too, we had a concern about the basic alleyway off the historic building, and that seems to have been dealt with too. There's one slide there where you show the actual hardscape of that area, and that there's a little variation in that. It's not this 3-foot spot that we had before. But there was always had a bit of concern on how that was relating to the historic building. Particularly with the stairway there. I know that in some of the earlier concepts, that stairway was a more prominent element. And I actually like that, that you've integrated it back into the buildings, so it doesn't, you know, it doesn't protrude onto the historic building as much.
The big issue that we ran into is that it's about 3.5-4 feet higher than sort of the centroid of our. So we ended up sort of stepping up the east end of our building with ramps and stairs so that we don't have to disturb the grade around the brown house.
I think that's helpful. The color palette that you've chosen generally for the project, I think it's become much warmer and much more in line with what the ordinance suggests. In terms of overall, I think pretty much the committee has addressed the issues and the architecture.
Any other comments or questions? If not, is there a
I move the committee approve the submission as presented. I'm not recollecting that we made any significant provisions, except there was a comment on development of the landscape. So I don't know if we can, if you want to add that as a condition. I would ask Lori to restate it, if so.
That would be a good recommendation.
Would you like to introduce also, there was this discussion about the streetscape manual.
Maybe
yeah,
that could
I
be.
Think it can be blended in together that you had made a comment to refer back, if you're in the design development of the landscape plan, to refer back to the downtown streetscape standards, increase planting to the extent possible on the north side of the building, and just ensure there's some treatment of the ground plane in the exterior areas around the building.
Address.
I amend my motion as noted.
Okay. To address the north side of the streets.
Excuse me?
To address the north side of the building streetscape. Okay.
Well, I think, you know, both sides of the building as far as South Street goes, not only to reconcile it with the downtown streetscape standard, if appropriate, but also to increase the softscape areas over hardscape areas.
So, I mean, the area on Church between, sort of between the trees, the landscape architect is encouraging you to add softscape there. Mm-hmm. But the debate is just that there's all that diagonal parking there, and do we want to filter through the through the landscape to get to the sidewalk? Uh-huh. But we sort of strongly agree that adding softscape at, you know, going east from the intersection on the north side, where we have that great big swath of concrete, would be.
And you have the ability to do a lot of softscape up against the buildings.
And we're showing some of that, right?
You're showing some of it. You're showing it. You're showing neighbors along there, which is fine. I mean, that's just a
positive. I mean, the thing that we're sort of fighting with there, Michael, is just wanting to create some shade along that edge as well.
Right. Yeah,
and not wanting to have the landscape so deep that it kicks the pedestrians out into the.
Awesome. Right, there's a sweet spot there, and I think Scott Avenue is such a great example of it.
Yeah.
And I'd like to add something to Robin's motion about setting up for eventual retail on Broadway, for future retail.
Commercial retail?
Commercial retail, it doesn't have to be food service, but...
I think it could be a recommendation, but not a condition, because it isn't specifically specified in the IID that it has to be retail.
In the past, you have conditioned that, and it is in your purview to condition.
Okay.
Plus the Rio Nuevo standards call for it as well.
Yeah, I know. I wish we could apply those, but we can't.
Well,
yes, we can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yes,
I should. I mean, I think in general we support that. We're all about that. But it's a question of how specific can we be, or are we just recommending that we do what we can to encourage or allow for future.
I think if you do enough of this work, commercial work, to know that if you don't take certain steps, you can never do food service in there. You can never do a coffee shop. You can never do certain types of retail.
It's a lot cheaper to build it the first time.
I would just suggest that the team needs to use their judgment as far as how much the project can support planning for of a range of uses.
I disagree.
Because I don't know that you can say that it has to specifically be food service.
No. You really can't do that. But
and so how is that different than what I just suggested?
Because the highest and best use is going to be probably some type of food service over some type of walk-in retail.
So are you suggesting that they need to plan for food service as a condition?
No, I'm suggesting that as landlords, that the property owner's highest and best use is going to be setting up for that now so that they can get the rents that they need to support.
Sure, duly noted. But I think what we're trying to do is articulate the conditions of our approval. So I just want to be clear about the amendment to the motion and how we're wording that.
That retail and commercial uses, including food service, be considered, be strongly recommended for the retail corridor on Broadway. And the rest of the, you know, the rest of the Rio Nuevo portion of that strongly requires or suggests that we complete the streetscape along the major corridors with some type of retail infill. So we're tying back to that.
And I don't disagree at all. I just want to be very conscientious about what we're asking them to do in regards to what the future flexibility looks like.
I'd like to hear from other board members on this, too.
How big is the large space?
The ground floor? Mm-hmm. It's not that large. I'm going to say less than 1,000 square feet.
Well, 900. It's 11. If these are the square footage, or these are the numbers. Sorry, these aren't the square footage.
I mean, 900 square feet is pretty small for any type of food user.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a perfect size for a coffee shop. Absolutely perfect.
I have a comment. Well, a couple things. One, it looks like they do have a little sink in there, so at least there's water to the site. And there is the bathroom, the vestibule, and the toilets right across the hallway. So that's fairly convenient. And what is the MPR storage that's immediately to the east?
Furniture storage,
just storage. Uh-huh. Yeah. But for sure, if they have it set up for computers, I mean, they would definitely have a lot of power in the space. Mm-hmm. So it seems like for the size of the space that's available, it seems like there's opportunities for flexibility without going as far as saying we want it stubbed out for sewer or other things like that.
Well, just bringing...
Coming from a non-architect, though.
Just bringing the plumbing to the space, and just even if you chased it over there somehow, just so that you wouldn't have to get into the surrounding space. If you ever wanted to convert that, you'd have to get into the floor no matter what you're going to do, because you don't know where those spaces
are. I think that's... is that a little sink? Yeah, and the pop-out right in here. So they have at least some water and drainage.
I mean, I think it's a great suggestion, and I'm happy to explore it. I think it would be probably money well spent, but I need to do a little bit more sort of research before I could outline exactly what that might look like or what the trade-offs might be or how much the project can support, I guess.
I also don't think it's to your benefit to make it too restrictive this time.
Yeah. It seems that conceivably you could put it like a 4-inch ABS pipe as opposed to a 2-inch stub to that location, which allows a little more flexibility, but doesn't really commit that type of thing. Just basic
to put what?
A basic utility sizing pipe, so that would be like a sewer pipe arrangement. Uh-huh. Just put a slightly larger pipe in there. It's not a huge expense, but it accommodates a lot more fixtures.
Emphasize the water line as well.
Same thing on the water line, yeah. Especially with the price of that going up continually as far as meter connections.
I mean, the water lines are overhead, though, in this particular project, so it wouldn't be a great burden to bring water to the site, lift it up, bring later. About the power, too. But.
So my concern in this is that if you don't take those steps, that we've really set this up to fail as retail later, because a reasonable property owners later can say, yeah, I'm not good. It's too expensive for me to jackhammer out the floors, for me to bring water down, for me to do this, for me to do that. And I'd rather know going in that we've set something up for this to go in that direction. I think the market's, there's a possible market for that space as soon as the rest of these units get built. And certainly as an amenity to the 75 residents, or the 75 units there and the ones over at Marist. And I know this from One East, because the tenants in One East came back to the developers after the fact, and a whole bunch of them got together and had a meeting with them asking for a coffee shop. down on the ground floor for them to go back in after the fact and put a coffee shop in. And I think you're going to see possibly the same type of demand there. So
I'm comfortable with just stubbing this in and increasing the sewer and the water lines. I think it adds value to the owners, the current owners and the future owners, but not determining where anything goes, but just stubbing them to the larger space.
I'm fine with that.
And no matter who goes in there, you're going to have to jackhammer and cut the floor to place the stuff in the proper position. So I just think just getting it to that space would be adequate.
Does that work for you, John?
Sure.
Okay, so how would that motion read then, to set up for future commercial use, including stub-ins?
Prepare for, not set up.
To prepare for, okay.
Potential. I have mixed feelings because isn't this one of the projects that you have to own for
30 years?
30 years, and there's not going to be any change of use. You might do something with the garage or a little bit of it at some point if you needed to bring in additional things.
Now, there's ways that property can turn before that. It can be sold before that with the same conditions. There's other conditions that will speed that process.
And just a little, I think it's a great recommendation. If I were building it, I would do that, but it seems like a new condition we're adding on. Now, after the first review, that's
I missed the last
different
meeting, but we've been consistent about this approach on all the projects.
I think it's consistent with what we've discussed previously.
That was right.
I think it's a little more specific because the project is now more specific, but I don't think it's inconsistent with what we've talked about.
No, and we held other private sector people to this, one east and one west, to be specific, to those standards, and they complied.
Is there enough fall to get into this?
They're now doing quite well because of that.
That's a good question.
But the centers and the owners are happy with it. It's fine.
That's not bad. I don't think it's going to add much cost because we're already plumbing the space, so we're subsidizing a little bit.
Yeah, I agree.
And just make sure there's enough fall to get into the sewer. But unless there's something dramatic, the expense should be very minimal, and I just think it gives everybody a little flexibility. I wouldn't go to any extent trying to plan the space. It might not ever become that. You know, there are fewer and fewer retailers. There's more food services, but 900 square feet is a small space.
So, Chris, would you mind reading the motion back?
I am.
Because we still don't have a second.
No, I don't. I have to move to approve as presented, including referring back to the downtown streetscape standards and to address and increase the softscape where applicable on the property. And to prepare for potential future commercial use, including stubbing in for utilities.
Commercial and retail.
Okay, commercial and retail, okay.
Do you need a second?
I need to make sure that covers it before we have a second.
So that was your motion. You okay with that amendment?
I am perfectly fine with it. Thank you.
Second.
Okay, second. So there's no further discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And I abstain.
Who is your landscape architect?
It's Arc Studios. You know them?
I'm glad that they're making suggestions and that you're open to them.
Always. Thanks,
everyone. All right, board, if you need to take a short break while the next group sets up, we can do that in 5 minutes. Yeah, those conditions will be simple enough for design and design professional.
Okay.
Look at it. Rick, you know, we didn't put that in there. But then we'll come back to you. You should come back to the design professional.
Come back to us,
you didn't learn.
Park and
flashlight.
Okay, that you wanted that, otherwise it was
fine. It was a nice article about it in the newspaper, I think. It's all bad. We've been lucky. It's been working.
I'll definitely put your considerations in my letter.
Okay.
Excuse me. Use hold on.
Chris, I'll definitely put your considerations in my letter to the
Okay. Good.
Hi. How are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. I don't think we've met officially, have we?
Not just on paper.
Yeah, my name's Kathleen.
Oh my God, you have a charter for that.
I don't have a city
car. Bringing a back door.
All right, and what position do you have with the city? Are you planning to serve with the city?
With the planning department. Yeah,
oh, okay. I'd like to talk to you about the streetscape.
Oh, my God.
Are you really with that?
Not directly.
I met with Mila the other day. Well, there's my car. That would be great. Thank you.
The more recent ones I think I saw.
I spent 150 hours on it. Everybody was happy. And then the bank came out and they went and scanned camouflage shorts and brought in four versions of Army Green.
How are you?
Billing it for veterans with post-traumatic stress syndrome.
It's really close to the standard. Exactly.
Isn't there a problem?
It's close.
And it's not just us. It's supposed to go to advisory board for crazy. They're not for something.
Because it's hard to.
I just thought.
Yeah, I'll have a talk with them. Last time I was there, I saw one set of colors, and the next time I was there, I saw the other set of colors.
No, I don't.
Because what she shared with me.
I did get the bump outs and the other stuff, so you can get a mask and better stuff.
Well, how are you, man?
You don't want to need to see your premium tie.
No, because I remember when we were talking the last time, it was the brownish green, and it was just kind of on the upper overhang and trim. I'll get back over there.
Because I think you're working on the Catholic classroom
What's your number? I'll just get the cell phone.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
Good.
Nice to see you again. I'm
nice
Robin.
To see you, Robin.
Things are. Yeah, I saw you moved.
All right.
Yes. Good. It's getting settled. That's awesome.
Okay.
start. Is that a record? We're going to keep ourselves.
I think so.
I'm super confused. Oh my god. Super confused. Welcome back, everybody. We're going to start on the second project. And Carolyn, you want to do a roll call?
Okay. Tara Gans.
Here.
Robin Schombach.
Present.
John Burr.
Present.
Kathleen Erickson.
Present.
Michael Keane.
Here.
Lori Woods.
Here.
William Viner.
Here.
And design professional, Rick Gonzalez.
Right here.
Thank you. We do have a quorum, and please note for the record, it is now 5:11. Thank you.
Okay. This item is IID-15-09, West Point Apartments, 10 East Broadway Boulevard. It's a low-income elderly housing. We're going to do this presentation a little differently. We're going to go through the project presentation, then the staff report, and then design professional findings, and then we'll go into questions that we put all together.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen of the IID committee. Philip Carhout, I'm the project architect for West Point Apartments. I have with me today Dan Ranieri's owner, La Frontera of Arizona. He is the project developer. And Rod Cook, who is the owner of Cope Community Services, who is going to be a major tenant in on the west side. We came before you back in February of this year and received an approval conditioned on six items that required your attention. But before I basically give you a brief overview of those, for those of you just catching up on what we're trying to accomplish here, we have an existing Westerner Hotel building, which has been determined by the State Housing or State Historic Preservation Office to be a living example of modern Bauhaus international style architecture in Tucson. It's a 55,000 square foot, four story building with a basement. It used to be a hotel, it used to be a motor hotel. And what we're proposing to do is to take the non-historic designation, which is basically a one-story podium with basement, which which is about 15,000 square feet of the original 55,000. We're going to completely demolish that west side of the property. We are a zero lot.
East side.
I'm sorry, east side. Demolish the east side. Maintain the west side. But we have basically a zero lot line condition on all sides of the building. There's no parking currently existing on site. We're not proposing a new parking structure on site. And that is one of the exemptions that we're applying for the IID process. Cope Community Services, which occupies a building directly across the street, is going to take the west side of the building that's going to stay. We're going to rehab substantially with Rod Cook, his portion of the building. And we're going to develop on the ground floor a tenant space of 3,000 square foot on the corner, southeast corner of Broadway, which is on the north side, and Stone Avenue on the west side. We have Jackson Street on the south side, Peach Properties, and 44 East Broadway parking lot is on the zero lot line to the east. So what we are proposing is, again, Cope's building will be substantially renovated, maintaining the international style. We're going to paint the brick facade, reintroduce a new storefront on all three sides. We have basically a three-sided building with a zero lot line condition next to 340 Broadway. So we're going to basically introduce storefront glass on all three sides of the building. We're going to maintain the existing enhanced street paving that's on Broadway and the light rail style. We're going to enhance that on Stone and on Jackson. As far as the exterior of the building, we're going to maintain the international style. We're going to renovate the balconies. We're going to keep the existing windows. And the building will cease being this blue and purple color, and it'll become more of a tones of grays and French grays and white. The addition that we're proposing is a six-story, 50-unit, low-income housing tax credit, which was won in June. In terms of our schedule, we're on a very aggressive development schedule. We intend to start construction as soon as this job closes in January. So we are through the first round of comments with the building department. We are at the threshold of having our development site plan approved by the city, pending an outcome of this meeting. We're proposing 50 units, as I said, of a mixture, of one-bedroom apartments that basically has a U shape around a light courtyard, two exit stairs, basically the same plan from above the ground level. So on the ground level, we have the supportive services for the housing component, which is dedicated purely for the residents. The residents will be advised that there's no parking on site. We're not proposing in our parking plan that we provide parking, off-street vehicle parking for the residents. We do accommodate all the bicycle parking, however, on site. Cope, which has office use on the west side, they have three levels of office space above the ground level. So we'll have a leased tenant space. We haven't identified the use yet for that. We have Cope's lobby, Cope's offices, and bathroom facilities and stairs and elevators. That will remain intact substantially for what's existing now, and it'll be a vacant tenant space on the corner, and about redevelopment of the storefront facade and paving and outdoor space on that corner. Above, there'll be three levels of office. And then as we go up this plan, the 50 units will be about 10 units per floor. Will terminate at the roof with a rooftop garden, which we didn't show in the plan last time we were here, but it was requested. So we're going to have four residents and four public Pellick wasn't going to enter. Yeah, Pellick was not going to be able to use that, but we do have a rooftop terrace floor that's basically situated between the rooftop equipment areas. So it's just the front half facing Broadway, and then I'll have the roof terrace. So in terms of the six items that we are here for, basically we came here for any revisions to the approved conceptual design. There are not substantial changes other than colors. We have windows that we can't put on the party wall conditions for basically fire code reasons. So we showed windows, for instance, on the zero lot line condition before, but now we're just going to have line recesses and different colors of textured block facing 44 East Broadway. We had windows shown here before facing west towards the Cove property. We're not, because we're going to have also a party wall condition there. So we eliminated those windows, but substantially for the rest of the Jackson Street and the North Broadway elevations, we have the same window configuration and storefront configuration as we proposed before. So those were the substantial differences. We brought our revised designs, construction drawings, to Don Ryden, our consulting historical architect who's working with Shippo. And he along with Shippo, concurred that there's no substantial adverse effect in any of these design changes or adverse impact on the existing historic Westerner building. We provided in your packages additional color options, and the one that we've identified as being the one that we want to go with is the one that we rendered here, so in its final form, and the one which we've proceeded with construction drawings. In terms of finishes, my designer Vance Goodman could kind of give you an overview of what we did in terms of stucco and finishes of the building.
So on the existing Westerner building at Teddy's Broadway, we're going to retain the existing stucco, because that's the historic that was built and put on that building. So we're going to repair the stucco that's there, but we're not going to add any driving range of an ecosystem to it. We're not going to add control joints. We're going to keep the three floating facade like the modernist intended. On the new portion of the building, we're going to have an EFIS system with the control joints kind of differentiated between the old and the new. And then on the central tower that kind of mimics the stair tower of the existing building, we have a metal panel that's a 1-hour fire rated. And each of the projecting balconies, French balconies, and windows has a small architectural feature that will be steel. And on the ground floor, we're going to have stacked masonry blocks to kind of mimic the pattern of the glass block of the existing building. And that will carry all around the first floor with the storefront glass in between. And we're maintaining the pilotes from the original modernist idea that the top is heavy and floating on these columns and the masonry floor. So we're maintaining that same idea.
Yes, yeah, still a lot of information absorbed in 5 minutes. But basically, this is the new portion. It's the historic portion added on to and redeveloped adjacent to the existing historic Westerner building. We were also asked, going down the list, item 4 or D was to provide a shade study. We've included the shade study. Basically, the north elevation is always in shade. It basically gets more shade. There's no adverse shading or really any benefit of shading from the addition towards the Westerner and the same for Jackson Street. It's basically going to be in sun all day and be shaded mostly by Rally Point Apartments to the south. Item E is probably the most important item on the list, is to provide the IID, the individual parking plan, which was submitted to the city parking department, and we just received comments today. We had, I guess, two two disapprovals or two complaints about the parking plan, and that it was commented that we should be adhering to providing a half, one space for 0.5 units, which would be 25 parking spaces for the residents. Nothing was mentioned about the office use, but Rod could attest to the fact that he is currently leasing 65 parking spaces, which is not stated in our parking plan, but that he will continue to lease those 65 spaces for the office use when he moves over from across the street. And that the whole basis of our tax credit was that we're servicing residents that don't need to drive, that are relying exclusively on high-capacity transit, such as light rail, bus system, walking in the downtown core to all the services. So that was something that we scored very highly on. It was a 20-point item in the scoring category. So, you know, we went into this application not wanting to provide parking for that reason. So anyway, that's our position on that. Item F, provide a ground-level design option that demonstrates flexibility for potential retail and commercial uses in place of a 3,000-square-foot conference room space shown on the current plan. So the previous plan, which is in your packets, I don't have it with me, but I do have the ground-level plan as proposed now, as currently being drawn, is to provide a 3,050-square-foot flexible retail space, as I mentioned earlier in my presentation. So we're trying to satisfy the time map with that. So with that, I'd like to open up to questions for the rest of your
I think we'll go to a staff report at this point, and then design professional network with the questions.
For clarification, my name is Carolyn Laurie with Planning and Development Services, for those of you who have joined us a little late. In February of 2016, this year, we heard the first formal hearing on this case, and it was a conditional hearing because at the time they weren't sure if they would be receiving LIHTC funding. And so a lot of the plans that we saw in earlier elevations weren't necessarily the final version. And there were some items that PDSD staff and the Infill Incentive District Design Review Committee did not feel were completely addressed in the first application, first submittal. And so part of the director's decision letter, which is the item that captures all of the DRC conditions, discusses the request for their requirement for them to come back and make this presentation to you today. It was a conditional approval, and so the items which Phil presented to you were generally correct. There are the true requirement to come back, I feel I need to read into the record for you all to hear. The statement says, applicant will return for review by the above-listed review agencies and authorities subsequent to the approval of the low-income housing tax credit application and funding. The applicant shall return with the following items. A, any revisions to the approved conceptual design package. B, SHPO concurrence letter that the proposed design and revisions will not have any adverse impact to the existing historic resource. C, provide additional color options. And D, provide a shade study. E, provide the Infill Incentive District individual parking plan. And F, provide a ground-level design option that demonstrates flexibility for potential retail and commercial uses in place of the 3,000-square-foot conference room space shown on the current plans. As of today, they have provided this the design package, which they submitted to you now. B, the SHPO letter was provided to us and was reviewed by our historic preservation officer. There was one item on that piece that we needed to have clarified, which was the first story demolition on the eastern boundary. There there are a couple of different variations of what's going to happen on that area, and it was not clear if the SHPO, if it was clear to that body that the first floor would be demolished, because that was part of the original historic structure. So I'd like to ask them to provide us some information on that. C, provide additional color options. Ultimately, that's your decision on the color palette today. There was an S there. D, provide a shade study. The shade study was provided, and it did provide the basic outline of what the code states. And then E, provide the infill and incentive of district individual parking plan. I want to make sure the group understands that there's some clarification that we need to make in this area. Through the first portion of our hearing this case, we were looking at one building. And over time, agreements have changed, and now we're looking at two freestanding buildings. And with that piece and that mixture, it changes some of our internal regulations and Rio Nuevo standards that we have to follow. The main piece with that is originally we were looking at one application, and it was a mixed-use project. Within the Rio Nuevo area section of the Infill Incentive District, you have the ability to waive all our office parking, period. So that would still be allowed on this piece. The second item is the dwelling units, the 50 dwelling units. Originally, when we looked at this building, again, it was back to mixed use, so we had an additional flexibility that we do not have now that we're going to see two freestanding owners. We met about 3 months ago and discussed this internally, and at that point, staff was not completely aware of all the changes that were being submitted and proposed. It was not clear to me either that the applicants, it was still a moving target on their end, so I don't feel that they weren't providing us the information they should have, or that things weren't perhaps correctly presented. It was just moving constantly. However, with the Infill Incentive District, it does state that one parking space per dwelling unit is required in the downtown core. And that item can be, that number can be minimized, or it can be flexible with the Infill Incentive District individual parking plan, which they have submitted and which Phil alluded to earlier. And that is also a public process that is above and beyond the Infill Incentive District. That was an item that was requested by the community to ensure that we would have enough parking within the downtown area for all uses, regardless of timing. I do want to point out that these LIHTC projects are, their lifespan is at least 30 years. There may be some ways that can be flexible, but the agreement with the state and with the lenders, I believe, is a 30-year minimum. However, our purview is forever. And so any conditions that are put on this building are from now until, you know, it's no longer standing. So with that being said, the individual parking plan needs to be addressed in such a way that that we can follow the fact that there will be parking. This is how many units it was approved in 2016, and in 30 years from now, we can go back if there's a change of use or they decide to go to market-rate housing, there is some kind of parking that's been discussed. With that individual parking plan process, we have received two letters of dissent and one letter from the parking administrator strongly suggesting that we, the PDSD and the design review committee, have them formally show in an agreement that there is a one-to-one parking for the residential piece only. Again, because we originally looked at it as a mixed-use project, we weren't able to really address it at that point, but now that we're seeing two separate buildings with two separate property owners, the office, the westerner portion, is waived, but there needs to be a complete individual parking plan. The comments were made by property owners within 300 feet of the structure. There was some information that was provided in the individual parking plan that was slightly flawed in a sense. It listed a couple of other apartment complexes within the downtown that they believed had no parking requirements, which in fact they did. They just were tracked in a different fashion. So that piece, the PDSD needs to clarify that. The Design Review Committee can comment on that. But the parking requirements will come through in a condition either here or through the individual parking plan. Wanted everyone to be aware of that. One of the comments was pretty straightforward, and it was made by Miss Ann Lawrence. And her concern was that if you're providing affordable housing in the downtown core, these people should also be provided affordable parking. Because at some point, most of us are paying, the market rate downtown is around $80 to $100 a parking space. And while our purview is not to have oversight of how much a parking space is or should be, it is considered an amenity and should be considered for this project. Are there any questions on the individual parking plan?
The actual plan was not a part of our packet, though.
That's correct. It was not a part of your packet.
A different project.
Well, yes and no. Initially, it was a different project. Initially, it was the same project. The last item was with the Rio Nuevo area. There are some restrictions on elevations and how much planing space can be left without additional kind of dressing. And with the party wall scenario, it did cause a concern. I'm sorry, can you please show us the west elevation?
Yeah, right here.
Yeah. And there will be a pretty substantial kind of white space in that area that was pointed out. And I believe that the owners and the architects would be open to some additional discussion about what would happen in that space. Especially, the top five or six stories. Other than that, the other question was on condition F, provide a ground level design option that demonstrates flexibility for potential retail and commercial space for the 3,000 square foot conference room shown on the current plans. We want to, I've had some questions on the political level of how this item would be addressed, and also on which building this condition would stand. And I'm hoping that in a few minutes we'll ask the owners to kind of talk about how they've discussed this space as a condition and who will be responsible for that owner, that piece, and just make sure that we understand which building it is, not that it's, at this point, it does not carry over to both buildings. It's just on the westerner side. So that's...
May I ask a point of clarification, because it's kind of germane to the what we're considering. Has a formal lot split and separate ownership already been pursued? Is it in process? Have they been formally split? Are they waiting to either demolish or repair the separated first story of the eastern half before those formal agreements take place?
That's a good question. During our meeting that I mentioned several months ago, we sat at this table and discussed it, and we asked them to put a hold on that lot split until after the Design Review Committee had the ability to take a look at this. And Jason, would you like to answer?
You want me to speak a little bit about how the ownership and why the ownership is the way it is?
Can I ask you to state your name for the record?
Sure. My name is Jason Heise. I'm the project manager for La Frontera, Arizona. Originally, when the project was being proposed, it was being proposed with both Community Services and La Frontera as co-developers. So they were both going to come in. Cope owns the land lease rights, and
LaFrontera was going to be the developer who was going to come in and do the affordable tax credit piece to it. And again, the property was going to be demised along these lines. Cope would take their half, and LaFrontera would take their half. At a later date, Cope decided they did not want to be part of the affordable housing development. They just wanted to participate on the west as an office owner-occupier. And so what ended up happening at that point in time, when you put these deals together, the equity and the investor at the end of the day has to take a position against a specific parcel. And so what has to happen for that entity to do that is we have to have a legal separation of the eastern half, and the equity partner will take a position against that for 30 years. Now, there's an extended use agreement that goes for 30 years. You have your compliance period of 15, extended use of another 15. So that building, this half, will be affordable housing for 30 years. Yes?
I'm sorry to interrupt. Could you define for me what affordable housing is in terms of the median income?
Well, anybody can jump in who knows more than me, and there's plenty in this room that do, but we're talking about the low-income housing tax credit program?
Yeah, I'm familiar with that, but I'm wondering about what percentage of the occupants have to live there for, or what their income restrictions would be.
40, 50, 60% of the area median income in this project specifically, rents ranging between $450 and $650. And income somewhere between $11,000 and $24,000, depending on their AMI level.
And so that's for 100% of the residents?
For 100%. And our project is specifically for elderly, 55 and older, with a preference for veterans.
Thanks.
It was our goal and hope to help the veteran population, along with one of LaFrontera's priority populations is elderly. So that's one of the reasons that we did it. So,
but that will mainly be achieved through marketing.
Huh?
That will mainly be achieved through marketing rather than incorporation.
Our marketing plan shows just over 15,000 potential tenants within a 5-mile radius, a capture rate of less than 1% for 40, 50, 60% of AMI. Even in the new units, the 313 new units that they project to be coming online, we'd capture around 10% of those units. Basically, there will be more people that want to live in this place that will be on a waiting list than there will be in the actual building. That's the way these things happen. So we have 182 units down at Park in Irvington right now. We have probably a waiting list of over 45 people in the elderly population. So there's a huge demand for affordable housing, specifically for veterans. That was the incentive of the Arizona Department of Housing. And one of the reasons, again, as Phil spoke about it briefly, about the parking, the qualified allocation plan is basically the rules that are spit out by the state every year of what they want to see. And what they want to see is they want to see people able to actually walk and transport themselves to all of their services without a car. That's the incentive. There's 35 points in the qualified allocation plan of a possible 180 or so that you get for being near high-capacity transit or a bus station. That's why the city of Tucson won 3 deals last year, because it's right along the high-capacity transit line. You're talking about the Westerner, Marist, and Gadsden. They're all on the light rail. That's why they won. The incentive for ADOH was to create units that people could get to all of their services. There are scoring categories. You have to be within a 1 mile straight line radius of a grocery store, of a senior center, of a park, of a library, of a recreation center. All those are scoring categories. That's why these projects score, because we are within a 1 mile straight line radius of all those services. The intent is that the people who live here don't necessarily have vehicles. And it would be a shame to see an affordable project who has an incentive of having high capacity transit or some type of local transportation not be able to underwrite, because we have to rent parking spaces that will never be used, which is exactly what would happen if we had to rent 50 spaces.
Okay, Jason, I'm sorry. Can I ask you to answer Mr. Burr's question about the lot split, and then perhaps we can go on?
Yeah, we can go on.
My fault. So this demising line right here, that's going to be the separation. LaFrontera and their investment group will own this piece. Cope will own this piece.
Okay.
And at this point, that hasn't been completed, correct?
It's just been legally defined.
It's all been drawn up.
It's all been drawn up,
but we
waited because you asked us to wait to actually go and record it.
Okay, thank you.
And I have another point of clarification. Was the Section 106 process, which allows for mitigation of historic problems, pursued for a combined mixed-use project or for two separate buildings comprising low-income housing and a separate building housing offices.
As it's been applied for under this process and as it stands now, it's one property and one mixed-use development.
Will it trigger a review if they're split?
Jonathan, you have...
For the record, can I just say that Mr. Jonathan Mabry is also here, and he can answer the question.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Mabry. I'm the Historic Preservation Officer for the city. The short answer to your question, it's a very good question, is no. And what I mean by that is it's not the uses that are considered in the evaluation of whether there's any adverse effects on the National Register eligible Westerner building. It's the proposed alterations to that building and how the new building is designed to be compatible or not with the Westerner building that it's going to be attached to. So it's all about design rather than uses. And there's no... the Section 106 process is basically, in a project like this, has only one step. And that is an evaluation of whether there are any adverse effects on any National Register listed or eligible properties. And when SHPO concurred with the finding that there is no adverse effect on the Westerner building, that was the end of the Section 106 process. Okay. So,
well, my question is based upon, if the buildings are split, then there's absolutely no adverse condition on the entire eastern half because it's 100% complete. But the eastern building is demolished at 100% as a separate building. So...
Oh, the one-story part of the mm-hmm. eastern part is not considered to be National Register eligible because it was a much later addition that was built after the Westerner building. Was
great.
Built.
That needed to be made because you asked the question earlier and I wasn't sure.
It was a swimming pool podium.
Okay.
I'd like to return to Carolyn's staff report and see if there's anything else you want to add.
One more point.
Thank you. At this point, all of our staff comments and questions have been addressed, and that would end the City of Tucson staff report.
Okay.
Thank you.
Next, design professional report.
Somewhat in follow-up to that, but particularly in regard to the east elevation, if you could put that back up there, please.
Sure.
Thank you. The ordinance specifically states that any facade on any of the facades that there will be a 50-foot breakup on the building along that facade. And it also says that there are window requirements for each specific elevation. And I know, I can see it deals with that in regard to the setback in the courtyard. I know that, I understand that brings light into the two sides, but it specifically doesn't address the condition of that elevation.
Well, that's going to be basically a three-hour firewall, on the lot line. And we don't know what's going to happen. Something could be built there. Somebody can come in here next week and fill in that parking lot with their own tax credit or their own apartment building, and then that facade's going to go away. So I hope that's being taken into consideration. That's why we had windows here before, but we can't put windows in that wall because it's right on the property line. We don't have room to set anything back because then we wouldn't have a project.
Yeah, I think that's typically how it's done it is set back slightly in order to provide that.
Well, in order to meet the requirements of our... And this is actually, quite frankly, this is the first time this has come up because we had the same condition back in February, and that's not one of the items that we were asked to come back with.
Just for clarification, Phil, that is the Section 512.7, the Rio Nuevo Area Zoning Design Standards.
Right.
And this section is required for all new projects within the downtown Rio Nuevo area, regardless of what type of application is coming through. So if it would be the Infill Incentive District or the Design Review Committee,
So how do they address the party wall conditions in this case?
Mr. Burr.
This is kind of a critical technical question. Does fire code, party wall regulations, and land use code trump development standards for streetscape design?
We sought relief from setbacks, so we pushed our development to the property.
Because that's the question that's being asked.
Right. They do not trump each other. They have equal authority in the eyes of their codes.
So it kind of depends upon us to theoretically anticipate future development, so there might be something that goes up on the east side of this building where the fire code would be applicable, but since the top three floors of the west side of the building will be over an historic building that will never change, we should probably address it on that side.
Technically, we should be addressing both sides.
Okay.
Thank you. And that can be addressed with color or...
Yeah, and we did make an attempt on the western side to break that facade up, and but again, we have a party wall condition.
So, just to clarify, right? If you split, then it's a different situation than we originally looked at as a mixed use configuration.
This east elevation has been the same since we presented. So, and we're relying on the approval that we got in February. So, sort of some of the background.
Well, I do want to remind you, I'm sorry, that it was a conditional approval, and the additional...
I didn't mention this one, specifically on the six items. It says approval for these exceptions. We got exceptions, and it said bring these six items back.
We're also looking at a different project now, a separated project. So
for clarification, the fifth and sixth floors of the east building extend over and look down onto
the western.
Well,
and they were originally going to be a courtyard terrace with openings.
Mm-hmm. And that's
different.
That's the lower left elevation there.
The lower left elevation, and basically the street corner elevation. That, you know, basically the westerner obscures most of that elevation.
How does the roof garden fit into any of this, or does it?
Before we go there, are you done yet?
Oh. I'm not.
Oh, sorry.
I had something else I wanted to ask in regards to accessibility. Primarily, since there's no parking, is there some kind of condition allowed for drop-off of...
Yes.
Disabled persons?
Yes, on the back of the Jackson Street.
Can you show us where that would occur? And is that adjacent to that loading area?
That we would have a space designated for loading and unloading on the Jackson Street side here. It is in the development package that's in your package.
Yeah, I saw that.
We have a back entrance.
I saw it, but I didn't notice that it was specifically designated for ADA. I saw parking spaces there.
Yeah, they put a curb ramp and an ADA curb ramp that goes down into that space in the development package.
Yeah, in the development package, there is provision made for accessible drop-off.
Is there an actual parking space for ADA?
Not designated parking, but designated drop-off.
Yeah, and then there is an ADA parking space.
There is one already.
Right.
Yeah, there is one existing already.
Because that, you know, the idea that there's no parking for that, for the disabled, that creates a condition. So if you address that...
We addressed it in the development package process.
Yeah. Those were my primary issues that came up with this change.
Thank you. Open for comments and questions.
I'll start off with a little one. The shade study, I just agree with the fact that the south side of this building doesn't need any mitigation. The three-story brick building to the south of it is too low to provide any shade across the street. So the entire south side of this building is not shaded at all. So I think we're going to have to do some kind of mitigations on the south side. in order to meet the plan.
Well, we do have deep window recesses on the Jackson Street elevation.
Is that in our package?
So I don't know, you know.
No, it's not showing.
We do have shade. We do have some shading devices on the south elevation on the ground ground level. And we do have some deep recesses and overhangs that we're actually purchasing air rights for to provide shade for those windows.
If I remember the standards right, it's 50% shading.
I mean, that's what we're able to provide at this point.
You cannot do that because the sun angle is wrong. All right, the sun's in the south, and particularly in the winter, it's barely over the top of that building. But in the summertime, it's still a few degrees south of dead center, so there's no way you can shade that sidewalk with a window overhang.
Well, I think the whole idea is it was the whole facade, all three sides. The north facade is completely in shadow all the time. The west facade is then under about 75%, and then the sidewalk was too small to put any planters on the Jackson side to provide anything. So the overall 50% number is achieved if you add all three together.
And I wasn't aware that it was that you could average out a building for that. I thought it was always a street-by-street basis when I had to do it. It's a street-by-street basis.
Well, we have a landscape architect designing this project that's already been approved, and I think that stipulation is part of that, the 50% shade.
Yeah, but you cannot achieve it with the overhangs that you have. You can't achieve it on Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right, if you go on a street-by-street basis.
I don't think you can. My recollection is that you can't do that. But
we have shading devices that we're actually building into the building where we can't provide trees.
Yeah, well, the easiest thing is to do canopies on that side.
We have canopies
that go far enough because you're right.
Well, we can make these deeper, they're projecting into the right of way.
Yeah, well, you're going to have to get a TRE for that. But that's a narrow sidewalk. Which begs the second question about the handicapped access there. That street narrows as it goes west. So it starts out pretty wide and gets narrow and narrow as it comes down. I don't see a drawing that shows a handicapped access over there for a handicapped access vehicle. But I think that should be something that...
It was addressed in our development.
Okay, it might be in there, and I might have missed it. And that's fine. But it popped into my head when they were talking that.
Sure.
That's a fairly narrow street. In order to get a handicap van in there, you're going to have to designate, you're going to have to make sure it's going to fit on that street. And perhaps it does. I'm not saying it doesn't.
There were comments in the development plan review in the packet. I didn't see responses to those. Are there responses to those that have been made that we don't have?
Not that I'm aware of. Okay. I do want to just clarify that Section 512.8 does discuss the shade, and the shade piece is part of the re-level area and the infill incentive district. So it is purview of this board to approve that and comment on the shade.
And does it clarify the way that the calculation is made?
It does not. I think that's something that changed over time, Michael.
It's my recollection that it's street by street.
Yeah, I just don't remember.
It's not a weighted average.
Okay. I'd like to just make sure
this doesn't address it.
No, I agree. It's not clear that that's being met.
We have much bigger fish to fry here.
Do you have more? No, that's it. And Laurie, you started to ask a question previously, but...
I was just trying to figure out how the roof garden fits in, and if you could point to it on the elevations and in the perspective, that would be helpful.
Roof garden is basically on the Broadway side, Broadway half of the roof. This being the proposed addition behind the Westerner, and it extends basically from the elevator penthouse to the Broadway elevation.
Okay.
And then this is the roof level plan. We do have a shade screen wall. We have access to an exit stairway. We also have secondary access to the elevators and the second stairway in the back on Jackson. So basically, you come up the elevator. Elevators, actually, only one terminates at the roof level, and you can get out the vestibule and then walk to the roof garden. And you have seating areas basically starting here. You have another seating area here, screen wall, another seating area back into the screen wall.
What are the plant materials shown?
Right now, that's they're box trees and shrubs.
Okay.
John Hucko is our landscape architect.
Okay, so the circles that we're looking at are trees?
Yeah, those are basically box trees.
And could you point out on the Broadway elevation?
Yes. Yeah, so we created a sixth window to that roof garden where there's no glass, just an opening.
Okay,
and there
it is.
And there's a screen wall it'll shade that and frame views from that roof garden out.
Okay, so that doesn't really help in terms of openings with the east face or the west face for that matter. Thank you.
Yeah.
Other comments?
It's kind of maddening to have to approve what will be two buildings where they're commingled to make a functional project. So it's taking a little while to wrap my head around it. I'm glad you've got parking for the office block. You've already got 65 spaces, but they don't apply. But they'd be allowed anyway because they're grandfathered in. The building's been there forever, and that's been its use. It's in my neighborhood. I'm not comfortable entirely waiving any parking requirements. I think they need to have a formal agreement. Otherwise, it's going to come into my neighborhood. Because some of these people, either that or they need to have a mandatory non-car ownership part of their, rental agreements or something like that. I don't know if that's legal. One of the problems I understand with Section 106 and federal LIHTC funded projects is you can't charge additionally for parking because we saw that in the box yard and a few other things. So something's got to be made there, and I think we need to address that in our condition. I'm really uncomfortable having that permanent dead way past 50-foot facade that's non-articulated on the west side of the building. On the east side, I can see it being dealt with color. I think there could be, some dark gray boxes, if that's the color scheme you ultimately go, that approximate window openings to break it up for relief. But I think it needs to be more of a shadow component on the east side.
We're going to provide some relief in that block wall.
I'd like to see it before I can approve it. And I think Michael's comments about the shading, I think we ought to add a TRA condition to get street level screening of some sort of awnings to all three sides of this building for pedestrians because,
there's already a 4-foot overhang and we can't add overhang. I mean, there's one that projects almost 8 feet at the mark.
I'm not so worried about the west side because that's an existing building.
And here I'm dealing with the light rail.
You don't need it on the north side.
The south side.
The south side, yeah.
Definitely. I'm glad that you incorporated potentially commercial space on the in the existing historic building, but now it doesn't apply to your project. So... and I realize you're limited with the LIHTC funding and the amount of apartments that you have to put in and so forth, and I don't necessarily want to see a taller building. I know that ups your costs and things. But it's a little troubling that it's so completely different. So I'm trying to kind of measure what my actual recommendations are going to be before we go to a
of having space to activate the second structure?
They don't have a space to activate the second structure. They have a very limited street face on two facades that they can't really do anything with.
All right. Any other comments?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, we've been holding everybody to the same standards that activating the major corridors downtown is a function of new infill architecture. And we've been consistent in that. And this project is the same. I agree with John that you've got two owners now. You've got two separate conditions. And that we need to activate this potential retail commercial space on the north side of the new addition, as well as continue to advocate for it here on the existing western end. It's the same standards we held the apartments do across the street, and they're thriving. The tenants they have in there are doing really well. The argument against this is that it's a big burden on the owners, but right now it's proving itself to be supportable.
And just to be clear, just so I understand what you're saying, again, we're not mandating that that's the use at this moment if the owner has another use that's required there, but that it's set up for that use for flexibility in the future.
Yeah,
is that correct?
We're one step away from demanding it, which you possibly can, or at least maybe it's not our purview, but it's Reno Avo's purview to do that. I mean, I'd like to be able to do that, but in all fairness, I don't know that we can. And I think that the same thing that we required the last project, right, we require here.
I would suggest that it's challenging to do that because I believe that there's other programmatic requirements that are sometimes a part of the LIHTC program to provide space, common space, and I think that's, if I understood the presentation and the material, that's what's currently being used in the first floor of the residential component. But I'm not disagreeing with you in terms of future long-term flexibility and the ability to change over time. I just don't know if I'm comfortable or that we're allowed to say that it must be that at the day that it's opened.
Yeah. And my argument would be that just because you decide as the owner to do a particular use of your building doesn't supersede the greater need for downtown redevelopment. So the things that are set in place for expanding retail corridors, walkable urban environments, pedestrian and bike safety, you don't get to go around that just because you change the use
I understand what you're saying, right.
Or something else.
But I also feel like there needs to be some flexibility about how those common spaces are provided. And one could argue that in this scenario, those common spaces are activated first ground floor spaces. They are being used by the residents, and they are active. My personal evaluation or take on it is that I feel like it needs to be set up for change over time and that flexibility with the encouragement of retail uses. But I am somewhat uncomfortable, and that's just my perspective.
Well, I also think activation can take different forms. Mm-hmm. I mean, and so what you're talking about can activate at this time, then maybe at some point in the future that activation changes.
There isn't any way we can ask them to do anything else more than what we asked the last project to do.
Duly noted. And I don't disagree with you.
And I wish we could, but I think we only wave on can if it wants to. But we can,
I'll leave that up to them.
Yeah, I'm able to.
I'd like to hear from Robin and Bill.
let me just first, make a comment about the package. I really struggled with this. There's a lot of information here, but it's very unclear in the short time that we had to review it what's future, what's current, what's the actual project. And that was very difficult. We got it on Wednesday, holiday weekend. We got the actual hard copies today. I don't know whose issue that is, but it was challenging. But just the material here, it's still very challenging to go through and really understand what you're proposing and to fight your way through that information. So I did the best I could, but I had a lot of questions. And primarily they have to do with comments that are included in the packet that are not necessarily addressed in the presentation. I think that some of those have been, and I'll skip the ones that I think have been, but there's still a lot that I have. The whole east side and the fire code trumping or not trumping or need to be taken into consideration, I think that that elevation still can be articulated in ways that do not involve penetrations, and so you should still be able to comply with the fire code. And I know that it wasn't specifically listed on the list of items that to be reconsidered, but since the entire really premise of the project has changed, I think it's still within our purview to make comments on that now. So that's just the way it goes. Your project evolves and our evaluation evolves too. So I think that's a fair statement, because there's a number of other things that weren't able to review with the original submittal that we now have either been developed farther or have changed because of the change in the project itself. So I think that's fair to say. And I think that there are creative ways that have been previously mentioned that you should take into consideration. There are a number of issues, particularly in the streetscape articulation and the Jackson Edge, that are addressed in comments on the plan reviews that I don't really see how they've been addressed in the presentation, and that's probably because there's a several site plans in there, I just couldn't figure it out. The whole trash pickup, handicap access, loading zone does not appear to be solved to me, but maybe I missed it. But it seems like it's all laid on top of one another without any consideration to how that actually would be used.
Well, we have street pickup with containers, and we have a trash room, so we don't have a dumpster. Okay, so just to clarify that, trash is picked up.
Okay, but on one of the comments, maybe it was difficult to see that. You have provided an interior storage for those at this point?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we have an approved development package now.
Yeah.
But
your development package has been approved?
No.
On this.
It's not approved.
Conditionally on this. They're holding off until this.
So you've addressed all of these comments?
We've
but
addressed all the comments.
Those comment responses have not been provided to us.
Okay.
So there is no way for us to evaluate that. And I know that's not necessarily our purview, right, but it doesn't make it easy to evaluate the solution.
We certainly would provide those to you, or can provide you our responses more specifically to questions that you have. We've addressed all the development plan comments with the exception of the IID meeting that we're having right now.
So, and just to follow up on that, those conditions that we're discussing were requests through the Infill Incentive District, and they have not been completely finalized yet. And so Phil's has some idea that they're approved, that it's been approved, but it is not approved until the Design Review Committee approves the plan.
Okay.
To that whole point of
Jackson, I think it would be helpful for you to walk us through that one more time about how the handicap drop-off works, how the impact of the loading zone into Jackson Street works, and how both of those work with when the trash pickup is in place.
And for both separate buildings.
Well,
yeah, it's true. You created a new situation.
It was submitted as one project, and it's being reviewed as one project.
But it isn't one project.
Wow.
Well, it is until we split it.
Oh, wait, no.
Whoa.
Okay. No.
That seems really very difficult.
I'd love to be able to get away with this next time I do a project.
But whoa.
So why don't you start with trash?
Okay.
Phil, why don't you walk us through how trash is handled
for
both buildings?
Yeah, page 34.
Yes, 34 has it on there.
Shows a little
bit. Trash for the Lawford Terrace side is here, and the trash for the Pope side is here.
Would you repeat that one?
Yeah, the trash collection and pickup is the Lawford Terrace side is here.
Okay.
Straight to here. And then we had to remove the planters to get them back over to here to the trash pickup. And the trash pickup is the same place for both buildings.
It's also the same place for your handicap pickup?
The loading zone and the pickup are in the same spot.
Right.
The handicapped parking space is one spot east.
No, but the handicapped van is going to have to use that same spot as the trash pickup there.
Where's the handicapped space?
It is. It's this first one right here, past the loading zone.
Okay, and the dark thing is the ramp going down to it, correct?
Yeah, this one.
Right.
Okay, sorry.
No, that's the sidewalk's cover.
So your handicapped space is, that's just the street parking space.
Yes.
That's not one you're providing.
Right.
It's just the street handicapped space. A metered handicapped space, is that correct?
Loading zone here.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So it's a metered handicapped space there?
Metered handicapped existing parking space, yes.
Okay.
So the handicapped person would have to leave their vehicle, come down to the corner, walking on the street, and then get on the ramp?
Mm-hmm.
Or they come in the back door.
Yeah, and that's been approved for,
well.
It has not been approved.
Everybody says not approved, but that's
we've addressed
all
the comments.
Working. And they've addressed, been
that's how we've addressed the comments.
But no, but there's not been a review and approval of that response.
There has been reviews.
There has been a review.
Yes.
By not
the
a,
reviews have not
a new comment. Not a new comment generated based on that.
Right.
So we have two buildings, two owners, and
one trash, one loading.
Right. So
no handicapped entry on the south side.
No handicapped entry on the south side. Now they can do shared agreements. You know, I think they can probably do a shared trash agreement.
And yeah, shared trash and
thank you.
Yeah, shared loading is part of the lot.
I don't know about shared loading, but shared trash for sure. I don't know the legalities of the rest of it, but we do this all the time, shared easements and shared sewer agreements, and you know, as long as the capacity is there. But that's a question for trash. Assuming that all those calculations have been done, I just don't see. I mean, having a vehicular handicap space is different than having a pickup and drop off for a handicap van space. Those I think are two different requirements. So 26 is the 12 by 35 foot loading zone.
Yeah, we're falling under provisions of technical feasibility and size and lot constraints to be able to provide everything.
So the loading zone is the drop-off, is also a drop-off space.
We're doing a dual
so
use.
Would it be inconceivable to provide the handicap accessibility ramp at that location?
No, we can move. I mean, there's a curb ramp right there at the street corner,
which I think you need for your crossing.
But you know, we could provide another one like 5-6 feet away.
Well, I just think it's a very tight little corner.
Typically, to do a true handicap loading zone, you're not doing a curb ramp anyway. You're doing a full flush curb condition,
right,
which we don't really have room for based on the width of the sidewalk. So it's been reduced down to a curb ramp.
But you're okay with adding?
We're okay with adding. If we need to add a curb ramp or relocate the curb ramp to, you know, accommodate.
Yeah, I think. Send someone down the street, especially there could be someone in the loading zone.
Right.
You know, all that stuff going on.
Well, it could be a car coming down the street.
Yeah, really dangerous.
Yeah, you're calling out a. Actually, I did remember that, right? But starting out, 37 feet wide and transitioning down 24 when you get up the stone. But, no, it doesn't until it gets to the end. No, it's wide enough to do that. It's fine. But I think you still have a problem of you'll need shared
use on that.
Yeah. Shared use agreements if they can be written for all those things.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we effectively have a 65 foot wide street frontage for one side and the other. Combined, they're about 120 feet wide.
So So that would have to go back to environmental services for one, and for whoever oversees handicap for the other, to see if those shared agreement will meet the requirements of that many units, both commercial and residential. But the access into Building B for handicap is where.
Sorry, what did you say?
The access into Building B for handicap is where. They don't have to go all the way around to Broadway.
No, there's an entrance right here.
Yeah, I don't have to. Sorry, I could have looked that up. They have to go
down the ramp and then all the way back up.
Can you
show
me?
Yep,
that's it.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
What page are you on?
You won't be
ready. It's still on the third floor.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Just one on the same.
Yeah, we have internal ADA ramps to secure that location.
And so my last one was just a confusion about the item number E in the letter, the infill incentive district individual parking plan. My understanding from the previous presentation is I believe we understood that it was presented with no parking. I also believe that we understood there would be an individual parking plan that would be reviewed and approved, and the implication there is that there's agreements for some level of parking. And so not having seen that and not still being completely clear on what the numbers and the requirements are, particularly since now it's not a mixed use, but it's split use or individual uses, I'm confused and troubled by the whole approach. I don't understand. The idea for me of the whole infill incentive district is that we are as a community providing leeway in order to encourage these kinds of infill development. I don't believe that we are carte blanche saying that the intention is to not require any response to those requirements, you know, not to do away with them altogether. And I'm not clear on still how that's being supported.
Well, I mean, I go back to my initial presentation. You know, the office side, you know, we're taking care of with lease parking spaces. The West Point apartment side, we're trying to attract residents that don't rely on automobiles.
You should know that other projects that are also doing this same LIHTC are presenting information on the demographics and statistics about car ownership and use, and they're not lining up with what you're presenting. And the traffic report presented here doesn't provide any kind of quantitative information as far as I could tell. And again, maybe I couldn't find it, but I'm not seeing that, and it seems speculative at best. And so that is troubling, that where there's not demographic or provisional information provided that supports the case that 100% of those residents won't be driving something.
And we just saw another project that works and has included parking and is financially feasible. So you can't even kind of lay on the argument that it can't work here and we can't make the numbers work. We just saw a LIHTC approved project on a brand new structure that includes parking.
And that's also, I think, some of the access in downtown. There's not a full-service grocery store on the streetcar line.
Yeah.
To expect people that are going to take bus service to get to a full-service grocery store, the closest would be at Broadway and Keno. Puts a lot of burden on them, or are expecting low-income residents to pay for their own parking space when they're already low-income, because some of them will have cars. And so I think there needs to be provisions for that, so it doesn't put a burden on them and on the adjoining neighborhoods, too.
The statistics I've seen in this workable number seem to be between 37 and 50 spaces per 100. And that seems to be kind of working. About a third to a half of residents have a vehicle. And some are doing Uber rideshare programs, some are leasing spaces, some are doing something to accommodate. And there's still spillover into the neighborhoods with that because there's always somebody who's got five cars.
Spaces for this.
Or 20 or 25.
And did the staff recommend 25 in review?
That's what code is.
Code is 50. They recommend
25.
It's one space per unit.
Yeah. Okay. Recommended.
Yeah. I keep seeing recommended.
I can see it being dropped statistically by 50%, but not a lot more. I think you're going to have to make a better accommodation.
So
I'd have to consult with my client on how.
You know, if you had a market rate, if you had a market rate project, I'd actually be your advocate here for you not having any parking spaces. Because the onus would be on you, and as long as you could get financing for it, make it work. There's a lot of the flip side of this argument is that if we're going to look at density, we're going to have to start relying on public transportation. It's impossible to build anything in San Francisco that includes parking anymore as part of the unit. But that's for market rate. I think Chris's comments and everyone else's comments about affordable housing is the argument gets flipped.
Yeah.
Just because you can't penalize this group that's already hardly able to meet their mobility needs in any rational way. And the streetcar line, unfortunately, doesn't provide
enough.
Perhaps they shouldn't be getting. LIHTC should be looking at a case-by-case basis for giving 100% of these credits for streetcar access, because in this case, he's right. You can get to a drugstore on the streetcar line, but you can't get to a full-service grocery.
You can take a bus.
Carolyn, you had a comment.
Yes, and one of the owners that provided concern on the individual parking plan wanted us to read into the record some information that the applicant presented at the neighborhood meeting. And I believe that's called out on the question and answer piece. In the original application, I'm not sure if you have it, but they do address they state the owner will form a contract with Park Tucson to formally appropriate vehicle uses for the users. And so throughout this review, staff saw that, the public saw that, as that they were willing to work with the parking plan, and that they would work with the city and a third party to find an agreement on those spaces. And that's something that's been coming, that has been throughout the entire life of the project, is that we all felt that they were working towards that.
That was certainly my understanding.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be just park-wise, by the way. It should also include the county, which has a lot more additional space than park-wise does these days.
Park-wise is almost at 100% capacity for the projects online currently.
Right, which is why if you're going to get an agreement, it's probably going to have to be with the county, or the city state garage.
Also, a comment was made early on about what happens to this project after 30 years. Maybe it switches to market-rate housing. And, then about 30 years is going to be different. Parking requirements may be quite different, or uses or driverless cars, but still, that's one possibility that's going to happen in the future.
I would bet that you're not going to have a parking problem in 30 years.
Probably not. So.
The question is that they mentioned that there's a need for this affordable housing, that there's probably an over-demand. So when the people choose to live here, I would assume that there would be people that would use public transportation. They wouldn't have their own vehicle. So is there another way to solve this parking solution or transportation without burdening the building with having the parking? Is there some type of service that could be provided for the residential component that would take them to their grocery store or whatever on a regular basis, that wouldn't be an expense to those residents?
They could
some
provide
type
shuttles.
Of alternate
yeah,
solution.
They could provide shuttles. There's a whole bunch of other things that are being offered with other projects.
Can I speak to that, please? Because in our application, we are providing weekly door-to-door transportation. It's part of our application. We have actual drop-off and pick-up, and it's in our application that we provide weekly.
In which application?
The tax credit application. It's one of our services that we provide to tenants.
And I don't believe that that's covered in your traffic study as well, which would have been a helpful thing to know.
Can you tell me what pages are the traffic study?
Well, there's the traffic memorandum, which is page 64. And then, yeah, I think that is from...
Because I also faced confusion when I got this, especially when I saw the cover of it. I thought, well, are they simply resubmitting the January 2016? Because that was what was on the cover, and it looked like so much of the information I see now, that some of the plan sheets have a different date, but... Yeah, that was confusing.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't substantially change the complexion of this project. You know, we basically changed the street corner, the colors. We never wanted to apply for, well, we have a parking, individual parking plan, which we did state we in our public meetings that we would try to seek out relationships with area providers, provided that the residents needed that service. But we weren't aware that we were going to be held to a certain number of spaces. We just wasn't made clear in the last meeting.
And we do own the property next door, the old Pueblo Club, and we do have 30 affordable units there, and we do not have any parking for those tenants. So it may have been our misunderstanding that we just assumed that we could do the same thing that we did with the old Pueblo Club, which is 30 units for affordable it's a LIHTC deal with veterans, that we could do the same thing next door.
What percentage of those residents, Jason, are cars?
I'm not sure who, if anybody, drives at this point, but we haven't done any studies or we haven't taken any information from them. It was just we didn't provide any spaces. We make it available, obviously, across the street if they want to rent some spaces, but our property management group hasn't received any negative feedback that we aren't getting tenants, or there's no or there are no spaces for my car. So it's 30 units next door. The other item that I keep praying, and I just want to just reiterate this as best I can. The project on its face, with Cope Community Services and La Frontera and a residential piece with a commercial piece, office space, the project has not changed at all. The only thing that has changed is that there's going to be a legal entity who takes a position against the residential piece, and that's because of financing. That has nothing to do with uses. The reason that things look the same is because things... Primarily, they're basically the same. We took the feedback that we received, and we implemented it, and we made the adjustments that we needed to make, but we didn't try to do anything that was significant. Certainly didn't want to come with a brand new, entirely different building. And I think if you look at our building, I mean, the only thing that has substantially changed within the floor plans would be whether we've converted the meeting space to tenant space. The Department of Housing asked us to reconfigure some of the residential community space to better fit the tenants, and we did that. But the rooms stayed the same. Phil and his group made the changes that they needed to make on the elevations, and we bring the package back. We fully understand that nothing is getting nothing is approved. Everything is being submitted, but we certainly, you know, would love to do whatever we need to do to make the project work. We made serious commitments to do this, and if there's a way that we can do it, I think what Phil
Jason,
by...
Jason, I'm going to need to cut you off so we can get back to board discussion here, because if we believe the board's going to make some movement on this.
My fault.
So.
And
our time is technically up. So just to finish off the parking... You know, when Bill was talking, it jumped into my head that this is a self-selected project. If you have a car and there are no parking spaces, you don't apply to this project. But if you don't have a car and there's a need and you want to live downtown, you apply to this project. I'm not sure that we can quantify an argument that says that we think that there should be parking on this project because it's low income and that somehow we're discriminating against this population if we don't give them parking spaces. And I don't mean discriminating. I mean, we are saying to people who have the least amount of resources that we're not going to provide something that you need. I think there's a probably, I think your earlier point about the number of people that are lining up on the other projects, there's still a fair need for this type of housing, with or without vehicles. So I see the argument both ways on this, but I'm probably softer on the parking requirement on this than maybe some of the rest of you are.
I would just say I'm still not clear on what's being provided. I haven't seen the individual parking plan. It's not clear to me what was provided as a part of the individual parking plan. That was a condition of our previous review, is that one be provided, and I haven't seen it. I don't know what it says.
I think both the more information on what this service that they're providing for, how many residents are here?
50
for 50 residents on demand that need to go somewhere. We've seen no provisions about how they're going to work with the county or the city on parking spaces, and I agree with that. And those need to be done and brought back in a way that that can be looked at again. But on the essential question of whether or not the affordable housing project must have parking, I tend to think that it doesn't.
I don't think it has to have parking on site, but even if...
Can I just clarify? We should not be focusing on the housing or the affordable housing piece. I know it's important, but in a lawful sense, we are looking at apartment complexes. We are not looking at affordable or market rate.
Exactly.
So we need to consider it straight across the board.
I understand that. And I would just say that the code, even in the infill area, has a requirement for parking.
Correct.
There has to be a justification for eliminating that. Even in the IID, there has to be a justification for it. And the implication is, or that there has to be accommodation, I would say, rather than justification, accommodation of that relief. And I hear the different arguments being made. I'm saying it really hasn't been quantified or indicated to me, mm-hmm. that
they
there is
laid out
a plan.
A rational plan.
I haven't seen the plan. The information that was provided here was not quantified. I don't know. There's not sufficient information for me to understand what is being presented.
Also,
whether it's affordable or not affordable.
The comments back on the proposed parking plan of no parking were the parking director for the city of Tucson not happy, not going forward with an agreement, and recommended that we suggest it. And the property owners in the area are upset because they've been held to different standards to provide parking. And the IID specifically says that the parking can be waived by 50% or more with justification. And I'm not seeing that. And I think whoever lives here, it's getting to the point that you're making all of us in the neighborhoods two blocks away have to spend $80 to park our cars, because we have no parking either, every day, to subsidize no parking for these projects. And we're at 100% saturation. I'm not willing to waive it entirely.
So
it's in my neighborhood.
Where does the board think we can go? Can we make a motion on this project? I think there's got to be some action, but I don't hear approval. As presented.
I'm sorry. Have you addressed your concerns, all of the design review?
I mean, the other design concerns, I think all of those can be solved. I mean, whether it's the shade or the east side, or I think the big issue is the parking.
Yeah.
And, you know, the west side of the building is historical. It's going to stay. You know, so there's no room to put any parking in that.
No.
If you, you know... I'm not sure where the parking comes from, other than off-site, unless you tear that building down and put a level of parking there, and then I'm not sure that the project works, so I don't know.
We're not talking about on-site parking as part of the actual project. We're talking about finding agreements that provide parking as necessary
as part of the project plan to go forward. They're very different things.
So when you're looking at these urban settings, I mean, this project can't afford to go build a garage, and there might not be spaces available for them. So I disagree. I think the affordable thing is something you need to consider when you're considering parking. It's almost like we're discriminating against an affordable project when we said for a marketing, if it was a Margaret project, we wouldn't necessarily need to provide parking.
I don't think we said that, but there was one voice that expressed
that. I said that, correct.
And no. I would disagree with the cost analysis of providing one floor of parking on this and taking this building up another floor, that it's going to kill the project. It's not our purview.
Yeah, I don't know that for sure yet.
And it's not our purview to decide whether or not we should be helping this project make money. It's our purview to decide whether or not parking should be required on this as we've required it on other projects.
I just view these urban projects, they're hard to make work. And I think as a body, we just, I mean, one of the things I think we need to look at is how can we help them? When people bring us these projects, how can we help them make these projects work?
And I have no issue with what you're saying. And I have no, I'm not suggesting that we're requiring parking on in the project development. I am suggesting that an individual parking plan suggests that there are other creative options to address parking, or what is going to be provided in lieu of that parking in the parking plan. Mm-hmm. And that's where I am not satisfied that that's been provided. That's okay. That's specifically the stipulation.
So is there an alternate plan?
Right.
If it's not going to be on-site, or even if it's not going to be rented, or if some other plan to provide some form of parking or transportation.
It's incumbent on them to present that.
Right, in the Western area, SS said they have 65 spots that they use off-site for their parking. So.
I don't see how we can.
I think you can put a motion together here, but we're not going to be able to grant approval on this until we see that parking plan. So you can either table everything until you see the parking plan or make a conditional motion here. But we still have to get back together again.
I'd rather do a conditional proposal that an IPP has to be accepted through the parking program that provides a proportion of the required parking for this sort of project.
Or on-site parking. You give them the option to put it on-site.
I don't think that's realistic in terms of the budget, the staging, the light tech.
Make it part of the motion that they have. They can either solve the problem by putting it on-site or providing a parking plan that mitigates, that shows how that's going to be mitigated.
I think that's what an IPP is.
Maybe.
I mean, just one other thing, and not everybody said this, but in the future we said there's going to be less parking requirements. So I think we need to look about the future also with these urban areas. So if you make that requirement now and it's not needed in 10 years, why do we do it? And especially for if this is an affordable project where people can either choose to live here without a car.
That's why we review the IID every 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, I just don't see that they've solved the problem. And it definitely seems like even if we move to approve it subject to something, even given the consideration of the van, the shuttle van, which is fantastic and wonderful, still you're still struggling with the functionality of that southern strip, and how does that work with the loading zone and one handicap, and where is this shuttle picking up and dropping off, and how is all that going to work? So I don't really think that the parking plan really, parking and transportation hasn't been thought out, and the site plan doesn't demonstrate that there's been consideration given to it.
Okay.
And I really think we need, any motion we make has to break up the western top 3 floors of the west facade, because that is essentially a permanent feature of the area because of the existing historic structure underneath it.
I didn't have a problem with that until today because what
it had windows before. It had windows before.
My point exactly.
Yeah.
So does anybody want to start a motion?
I did the last one, you guys.
I think we can tentatively make a motion to approve the project with X conditions. And we need to harass those out before they get read back to us before we get to a final agreement.
Why don't you articulate the
conditions?
West-facing window.
I think there needs to be a actual physical shadow relief of a break on the top three floors of the western face of the upper stories, of the eastern portion of the new building. I think there needs to be at least a color or treatment addressing of the breakup of the 50-foot requirement on the east side of the building. I think there needs a secondary condition. I think a shade provision on the south side of the building, pedestrian, needs to be addressed.
And when you say pedestrian, you just talk about first floor only?
First floor only. You know, if they want to bake their residents because they're not providing screening on their windows, okay, but that doesn't mean people in the street have to fry.
There is some glazing that helps that solution, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's right. Their decisions, not ours. I think a satisfactory IPP must be completed that either includes a possibility of parking for residents or some other satisfactory mandated agreement with a parking agency, whether it be City of Tucson or Pima County, to waive up to a proportion of the required spaces for the residents.
So it could just be a satisfactory IPP plan?
Yeah.
Okay.
And those were my big ones.
Can I add
do you want to activate the streets?
A comment that as part of that IPP plan, assuming or if it includes pickup and drop-off for residents, that be reflected on the site plan, that the site plan accommodates that pickup and drop-off.
I think that's almost a separate issue, and it probably should be a fourth condition.
Okay.
Which I'm fine with.
Okay.
And the fifth thing we were tackling, need to recommend at least a stub out for future...
The exact same language as we used on last one.
Provide stub outs for possible future activization of the north streetscape facade of the new... residential
building.
Those would be my five that I've really picked up with these separate things.
John, can you go over the shading that you suggested, the first one on the west and east side?
I think some sort of either a TRE or a canopy or some other provision that can be done through the design professional and staff must be provided for to meet the pedestrian shading on the Jackson frontage of the properties. Does that sound?
Mm-hmm. And I will second this.
We're still working on the motion before we second.
We talked about some other ones. Those are the ones that...
We have a satisfactory IPP plan, a van pick-off, drop-off, space defined.
And that when you say satisfactory plan, satisfactory to
City of Tucson?
In other words, it just seems vague to me.
Right, it does.
That the director can waive any of the standards in the IID, parking requirements, so on and so forth, if a reasonable plan is presented that meets the IPP process. So if they say, okay, we're going to rent 25 spaces, or we're going to provide Uber cars, or we're going to increase our shuttle services to daily or five times a week, or we're going to put in lease agreements to say you can't own a car if you live here because that's not what we're looking for, or yada, yada, yada. There's all sorts of things that can be done to address that, but it has there's too many negatives to the proposed IPP to grant it currently. It's got to be resolved, and we need to say that we agree it has to be resolved.
So are you suggesting that, that the PTSD director approve the IPP plan?
So that is correct. That's how it runs. It's a UDC
that's,
section.
I'm just clarifying what he's so I can, yeah.
And it also has
to be ultimately, we're just a recommendation. Yeah, somebody else is going to approve this above us. Correct?
Yeah.
Right.
And I don't care which one they pick, but they got to pick something instead of saying, hey, we're not going
to
do anything.
But it gives them an opportunity, the applicant an opportunity to come up with some alternative, creative plans.
Do you think that will meet Jonathan's or Donovan's request?
I do not feel comfortable answering for him.
Okay.
Well, with
do you want to read that again for the?
Could you before we do? Could you just clarify a couple things, Carolyn?
Yes.
On the IPP that was already submitted, to whom was that submitted?
It was submitted to the Planning and Development Services Director through our zoning administration team.
Because there's a whole process that's outlined in the ordinances about the IPP and the process that it by which it's reviewed.
That's correct.
And our role in that is, could you remind me of that?
Your role is to state two things. One, is it appropriate to waive or to allow the modifications to happen down to what the Rio Nuevo area states for units. So that would be a 50% modification. It's not, we're not waiving. This group, there are certain items that you can waive, certain items that you cannot. Parking is not one that you can waive, but you can agree, not waive 100%. You can agree to move forward with the individual parking plan or not.
Okay. And that's I'm hung up on this because we haven't seen it. So how can we agree to waive or not waive on a plan that we have not been party to? So when was it submitted?
Let's see.
Submitted about a month ago. We actually got it right before we came to the
IPP. If it's waived in a reasonable portion that other people are, and I don't want to make that determination myself. I think
I'm just saying I don't know what's being asked at this point.
What do you think of
so
the IPP?
Can't comment on something that I've never seen.
Understood. And they were asking for a 100% waiver, and there was some information in that, and that was flawed. Specifically, they called out some other properties or projects that they believed had 100% waivers, but they didn't. And they were. There were some areas that were called out for possible parking, but there were no agreements that were made. It was not a complete application.
So to your point, Bill, there is a process in place to review and approve the IPP, and we have a role in it that's stipulated by our place on this committee. So I think the condition just that it be submitted and we follow the procedure that's already in place.
Could we look at
I don't
it?
Think we're asking for anything that is different than what's already there in terms of clarity, if I'm understanding the process properly.
Mm-hmm. Which you are.
It's just a significant piece of the development of this building, and we have not had a chance to review that and comment more intelligently on it.
Would it be that this would suggest a return back to committee? To review it once we...
I would say that's our responsibility, myself.
I agree.
If part of the process is to ask for our recommendation on the IPP, which is, I believe, what you just described...
Correct.
Then I feel like that's our responsibility to give our recommendation.
Okay. And I wouldn't be willing to grant 100% because it was flawed data as you...
Well, I can't say that.
But I don't know what it is.
We haven't seen it yet, so I don't want to...
It's hearsay.
If you want to pre-propose, that's up to you.
We don't need to have conjecture. Let's just, we'll see the plan, and then we can back to that.
Okay. Are we also supposed to review the color? They have recommended the French grays. They gave us three proposals. Are we supposed to comment on the three of which we like best? Does it matter?
I take no issue with the color proposed.
I don't either. But
I like the one that they had up.
French grays.
Okay.
Yeah, I take no issue. Okay.
Well, it was part of just what was presented.
Right.
Yeah.
Carolyn, what are, I'm sorry to get all procedure-y, what are our other options? Approved with these conditions, how does that affect the process for the applicant?
Well, they are moving forward pretty rapidly. I believe they have a date set by the end of the year that they have to have permits pulled. Perhaps I could ask Jason to fill that out. So your options are approve with conditions, continue, or deny.
Is there any reason with the amount of information that we're requesting that we wouldn't continue this?
Are you asking me or your...
I'm just generally asking if that is actually less confusing to the applicant. We're just asking for the additional information on those items. I would imagine that the group could reconvene once those items were submitted for our review.
Well, it's certainly in our purview to be able to review those things, and we don't have all the information to do so at this point. So
yeah, it would be nice to get it ahead of time so we can study it and come and just dispatch it pretty quickly.
Would that put an undue burden on the developer? Let me ask PDSD before you come.
Okay.
I believe that these are items that they could research and turn around in the next 10 working days. I don't see that these items are deal killers on either side.
Should we table the motion and request to come back in approximately 2 weeks?
I kind of think that now that we have articulated our concerns, it would be good to have those as part of the record and make it approval subject to, because then we don't have to go, what did we say a week or two ago? And, you know, because we pretty well articulated all of our concerns.
I think either way, we're talking about a follow-up meeting.
Uh-huh.
I take no exception to that.
And I don't know if this should be a condition or a request, but I think as a matter of precedent, because this is going to come up again, probably, I think there should be a letter saying that by splitting the projects, even though it went through as one project, Section 106 is okay, and that SHPO is still okay, because they were stated today at the meeting, but they're not part of the public record. And I think they should be, so that future applicants know what their requirements will be when a situation like this comes up.
All right. It's all that. It's about that time of night where everyone wonders where are you
and where's my dinner?
Well, it's time for breakfast.
I'm still living off of last Thursday.
Do we have a motion?
Well, a motion to approve project as presented with the following conditions is a start. And a TRE or a canopy on the must be provided on the Jackson side of property. To meet shade requirements. There was color treatment to address the east side to break up the 50-foot.
A visual breakup of the east side facade, not necessarily requiring change in surface depth.
We have the same condition on the west, by the way, as the east in terms of,
I realize, but I see the east potentially being developed and fixing your problem. I don't see the west side ever being fixed. That's why I recommended that it actually has some sort of physical breakup in addition to color.
What would satisfy that in terms of how deep?
fake window openings.
Okay. So just surface treatment, more surface treatment.
Surface treatment
shadow.
Breaks it up.
Yeah.
That creates
a
shadow.
Line
shadow
already set up.
It worked when you had the little windows.
Okay, gotcha.
They're gone.
Gotcha.
You got to put something there.
We'll put something.
Surface treatment of west side. Okay.
Okay.
Upper three floors.
I'm hoping that just gave you some ideas beyond fake windows.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not saying what you should do. It's just
exactly
clarifying the van pickup drop-off space. Or defining the van.
Thank you.
The color palette as presented was suggested, and to review the IPP plan.
You gotta give them the worst so they come up with the best.
Okay.
I second it.
Okay. Any more discussion?
I just want to clarify that you're approving with the following conditions with another hearing set in the near future?
I would say to return.
To return?
To return to finalize the IPP portions.
To return to the
cover all of those conditions.
Does anybody here know if conditional approval allows for planning to approve the development package, or does that have to be tabled until we meet again?
You can move forward, but the final approval would be contingent on this.
Okay. And then is there a date for us coming up that's timely?
I'm just beginning to address that. Okay.
So to return to review conditions. So.
A timely return?
Yeah.
I think our next meeting would be relative to when the information can be submitted so that we have a day or two to review it before we get here.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I really strongly recommend if you could make that submittal so that it is very clear and concise and really addressing exactly what we were looking for, that would make our review of it much easier.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, are you ready for a vote? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay. Next on the agenda, we have approval of legal action reports. The first one's from February 2nd, 2016. And everybody's received those comments. Are there any feedback on the comments?
Are there any extra copies of the November 7th? Or are we doing them one at a time?
I wouldn't do one at a time.
Okay.
Let's do them one at a time.
I had no comments.
Okay. I didn't either.
Do we need a motion to approve?
We do need a motion
so
to approve.
So moved.
Is that on the first one?
Yes.
Yeah. I'll second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Motion approves. On the second one, this is the approval of legal action report October 7th, 2016 for 7th Avenue Commons and the Corbett Brewery.
May I see it for a second?
November.
It's November 7th?
Oh, it is November.
Except the heading.
That is a typo. Yes.
Except your heading actually says it's February 2nd.
Okay, so we have... I'm going to say that, yes, there are numerous Scrivener's errors in this.
Yeah.
And if you would like us to return to you with a cleaner version that we can send through email,
That would be great, and we can do it at the next meeting, because most of them are. Besides typos, the only thing I wanted to point out was that it was Lori that made the request about the reproduction parking for the Corbett, not me. And third paragraph in from...
Let's just send these to her.
Okay.
And that way, any corrections we can send to Carolyn, and then she can make those corrections and then bring it back to us at the next meeting.
And I apologize for those errors.
It's all right.
But it was kind of quick.
I didn't realize the ends had two ends, but I'm actually going to start spelling my name that way because it looks...
I like Jonathan Mayberry better, too.
Okay, so you want us to just send those via email?
Yeah.
Is that correct?
I'd say send them to email to Carolyn directly, and so we see those corrections, and that way...
When does the LAR have to be filed, or does it matter?
Well, it's 72 hours.
Yes.
Ooh.
But, you know...
The draft has been filed, and we can always make revisions.
Right.
Okay.
So let's, you know, maybe this week all of us get our comments back into Carolyn so that it can be changed.
Yeah, please send them just directly to me, not in a quorum.
Yeah. We cannot talk to each other. So.
Well, we can one-on-one.
One-on-one, yeah, that's things. It. Okay. Next on the agenda.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Future items. Let's see. Is that what's on the agenda? Future agenda items. We know what one is.
Well, this one, we have the Rendezvous Downtown, which is market rate housing on the One West Church site, which okay. is pretty cool. We also have La Placida yes. coming up, and we have City Park, which is
that the Bourne property?
Yeah, on the post. Yeah.
That'll be in December or after the year?
It'll be after. These will be in January.
Okay.
Could January, we February. Have a, I need to education on the downtown streetscape standards.
You got it.
And so maybe we could walk us through that or provide them to us.
Actually, they were still in flux last year. If we could all get a copy because I haven't been able to find them easily.
This is really tangled up since I wrote the standards. Oh. And they... Some people think they've been approved, and some people don't think they've been approved.
Had they been approved by mayor and council?
We have a policy.
Just a policy?
Yeah.
That's why it's hard to find.
And so we just went through the. I just went through this with Kathleen last week and started to get into the entire history, going all the way back to the infill incentive. I mean, the infrastructure report. It's a lot. You guys don't want to know all the stuff. I'll try to bring you what we think is the streetscape standard.
I'd like to see the whole standard, and then if you want to do an executive summary of what's important for us to look at, great.
I can't wait.
But I don't mind looking at the whole thing.
All right, I love you guys, but I gotta run.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
And with that, Mr. Chair, we're gonna call the audience.
You're gonna call the audience. We want to go home, so make it quick. Okay, thank you.
Motion to adjourn.
At 7:05 p.m.
Seconds.
I want to thank you all for coming today.